Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and I suppose if you were desperate to find a silver lining, you could argue that at least nobody will be able to pretend anymore that you're not allowed to talk about immigration in this country, given that many mornings it currently seems, and has done probably since 2015, that we never talk about anything else. But it is significant that the Labour government seems set to move onto territory more ordinarily occupied by rather more right-wing outfits. In fact, Shabana Mahmood's plans look very, very similar to something that Priti Patel tried to introduce 2 or 3 years ago. It didn't work then, but it doesn't mean it won't necessarily work now. But there is one element of her pronouncements that I really want you to tell me your thoughts about.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the government has moved to defend changes to human rights laws as part of a major overhaul of the asylum system. The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, will set out a series of changes in the Commons later. They'll include fast-track deportation and limits on appeals. But the Border Security Minister, Alex Norris, has admitted to LBC there's work to do to convince some Labour backbenchers.
I know they see the Britain I do that is a generous, open and tolerant one. I say to them that if we're going to maintain the public's confidence in having that sort of asylum system, we cannot have 30,000 people in hotels, 40,000 people crossing by dangerous boat journeys. That's why we're doing this package. And in doing so, we can open safe and legal routes and have, you know, the system we want.
Separately, LBC has learned the government's preparing a major ad campaign to discourage people from illegally moving to the UK. Newspaper, radio and TV adverts will be rolled out in Middle Eastern and North African countries. There's more on this story on our website at lbc.co.uk. The former Prime Minister of Bangladesh, Sheikh Hasina, has been sentenced to death for crimes against humanity. A trial lasting several months has taken place in her absence after hundreds were killed in a student-led uprising last year. Hasina is thought to be living in exile in India and has refused to recognise the authority of the court. Sky's reporter Neville Lazarus, who is in New Delhi, says she faced multiple charges.
Murder, torture, disappearance, using lethal weapons, also directing the heads of security forces to use choppers and drones to bomb these students protesting against the government in July last year.
Donald Trump has changed his mind to back the release of files surrounding the Jeffrey Epstein case. The president's told his party, "We have nothing to hide." The vote's expected this week. And technology developed for Formula One cars is to be used to try and improve Wi-Fi on trains. Great Western Railway is understood to be running a pilot scheme on some of its routes. It'll use signals from mobile phone masts and low-orbiting satellites to try and create a better connection. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 8 at 96.90. The pound buys $1.31 and a euro 13. LBC weather, dry and chilly for most, some light rain for northern Scotland with a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Oh. So, off to my mum's first.
Yeah.
Then your nan's.
Yeah.
Then my cousin's.
Yes.
Then Uncle Paul's.
Yeah.
Then your second cousin twice removed from your dad's second marriage.
I mean, they did send us that card. Wait, who's my second cousin?
Škoda's got you covered this Christmas. With great offers and delivery before the big day on stock vehicles, you can do it all in a new Škoda. Find yours at škoda.co.uk. T's and C's apply. Ask your retailer for offers.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It is 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Just sort of noting that Donald Trump story in the headlines there. I mean, the transparency's off the charts, isn't it? It would appear that Donald Trump himself has now developed Donald Trump derangement syndrome as a consequence of him now calling for the Epstein files to be released. He has changed his mind, we learn. In case you are not paying attention to that story, and I think on this occasion you probably should be. You won't be surprised to learn that all he's done is recognise that he's going to lose. Enough Republicans are going to rebel by voting. He's already fallen out quite violently with the Jewish space laser lady, but enough Republicans are going to rebel by voting to release the files, so he has to pretend before that happens that that's what he wants to happen, so that he can pretend he hasn't been humiliated and rejected by members of his own party. So much Trumpology is a little bit like Billy Bunter, isn't it? Or a sort of ranting toddler insisting that the opposite of what they claimed 2 seconds ago is now true. But that is the only reason why he is now calling for the files to be released. And then two things will happen, one of which is already underway. There will be attempts to claim that men who had sexual relations with young women and girls aged 15 or thereabouts weren't really doing anything that wrong after all. That's already underway from some Trump loyalists. And the other thing will happen is simultaneously, when embarrassing or shaming things come out in those released documents, the claim that they're not true, reliable, or accurate will reach weapons grade. And as ever, the only question becomes, will he get away with it this time? To which you'd have to be pretty confident to answer no, wouldn't you, given how much he's already got away with before. We may have a little bit more on that subject later in the programme. But we turn our attention, but both necessarily and intriguingly, to a speech that Shabana Mahmood, the Home Secretary, is set to give later today, in which she is going to reprise policies last aired, although it's surprising how many people paid to sort of analyse and unpick this kind of stuff haven't really noticed that most of what she's proposing has already been proposed before by one, if not two, Conservative Home Secretaries. And I want to, if we can, have a grown-up conversation about this. There's a couple of things that depress me, actually, because I think she's right when she suggests that quotes, illegal immigration, end quotes, and I'll explain those quotes to you in a moment, has torn the country apart. You know how many people have become addicted to the outrage economy. You may even have someone in your life that there's an agony aunt in the newspapers today addressing somebody's 73-year-old father who has become addicted to this sort of outrage on these issues that seems to be everywhere at the moment, mostly on social media, but inevitably it has leached into real life as well. And when you read a Labour Home Secretary saying that illegal immigration has torn the country apart, and you realise how lost some of the logic has already become, because what they are describing as illegal immigration is asylum applications, which generally receive, I think the figure is about 90% approval ratings. So you're talking about, quotes, genuine refugees, end quotes, who cannot come via any regular routes, thanks to Tory party policies. And listen, it's 7 minutes after 10, and I am waving a white flag here. What I'm saying is completely true, but I don't think it matters. I don't think it's mattered for some time. I think we may have pinpointed the moment together when we thought it ceased to matter. But when that phrase illegal, which became a noun very quickly, didn't it, rather than an adjective, it became a noun, we started talking about, well, I didn't, but lots of people started talking about illegals, and they conflated asylum seekers with illegal immigrants, because technically it became illegal to cross the channel in a small boat and arrive here irregularly, but it also became the only course of action available for people who wanted to come here for a variety of reasons, most of which history teaches us are to do with familial links and language skills. But again, that's another white flag. It's a sad day for facts when a Labour Party, when a Labour government moves onto this territory. So there are two facts for you there. It is semantics to describe these people as illegal immigrants, because they quickly become legal in 90% of cases when their applications are processed. And the second bit that is simply not true is that people are drawn here rather than other places where the rates in percentage terms are more or less the same, because we are perceived as being a little bit more generous, or what's the phrase that they use, soft touch or something like that. Again, it doesn't stand up to scrutiny. I think you get about £9 a week if you're sleeping in a bunk bed in one of these repurposed hotels, but I suppose that's preferable to sleeping under a bridge or sleeping in the kind of conditions that you might be enduring in Calais. So those two white flags are being raised today. I don't know what the plan was when the Tories criminalised asylum seeking. I really don't know whether this is what was supposed to happen, whether they knew that the electoral writing was already on the wall, and therefore they decided to bequeath an extraordinarily toxic legacy to a future Labour government. But I do know this, those two battles have been lost. And if there was any doubt about that, Shabuna Mahmood will remove it in the House of Commons later today. Genuine asylum seekers are illegal immigrants. That is Britain. That's Brexit Britain in 2025. And you can't win that argument now. It's over. If not for a generation, then at least for an electoral cycle. Or at least as long as Shabuna Mahmood remains Home Secretary and equally Keir Starmer remains Prime Minister. The other lie that's probably worth reminding you of is that these people are staying in 3, 4 and 5 star hotels. I think it's probably fair to say at 10 minutes past 10 on November the 17th, 2025, that anybody's still making that claim in the professional sphere, in the world of people who get paid for their opinions, they know that they are lying. Okay? I think it's perfectly possible for your dad or your Auntie Doris to go on Facebook and come away convinced that that's true. They are being lied to. But anybody who is paid for their insights or their input, whether by media organisations or by Elon Musk's commoditisation of hatred on social media, the simple fact of the matter is anybody claiming that the people put up in these buildings enjoy the same levels of service and attention and facility and amenities as people paying normal prices to stay in 3, 4 or 5 star hotels, they know that they are lying to you. Okay. So in fact, I may just bear with me a moment. I'm just going to secure a pen. Because these are things that are important. I'm just sort of making a list, if you like, of the lies. And the first is, of course, the conflation of asylum seeker, genuine asylum seeker, with illegal immigrant. Because that's what we've been told for years. Oh, I don't mind the genuine ones. It's the illegal ones I don't like. So the Tories turned the genuine ones into illegal ones. Fact. I don't want to turn into David Brent or anybody like that, but I'm probably going to say fact quite a lot in the course of the next couple of minutes. The second one is that we are somehow more attractive. I mean, in a way, we are more attractive to people who already have family here or who only speak English as a foreign language. They don't have any other languages that they have been taught to speak. It's one of the great legacies of empire, of course, is that England, English is a sort of lingua franca, if you pardon the pun, around the world. So the idea that we're a soft touch isn't true. And then on a less important note, the idea that they are staying in 3, 4 or 5 star hotels, akin, if not identical, to the ones that we stayed in when we were kids and went on holiday in Exmouth or Morecambe or, some other delightful British holiday resort. None of these things are true. But it is true that, quotes, illegal immigration, end quotes, has torn the country apart. Because of that YouGov statistic that I bored you rigid with 2 or 3 weeks ago that shows if you ask people what they care about most, they'll tell you in second place it's immigration. And yet if you ask what affects their life the most, they'll tell you that immigration is in seventh place. And that doesn't even qualify or specify illegal. So the war has been lost. People like me who essentially are motivated by the knowledge that even if you banned immigration entirely, the people who rant about it most or the people most persuaded that it's ruining their lives would see precisely zero improvement in their life. And that in many ways is the patriotic position to adopt. People who feel that they've got the rubbish end of the stick in life, being encouraged by people who have got all the gold, encouraged by the people who've got all the gold, all the prizes, all the luxuries, to blame foreigners or to blame immigrants for their own circumstances is as old as the hills. But if you were to abandon, abolish, completely ban immigration into this country, life would get worse for everybody. Actually, absolutely everybody. And of course, if you're going to start deporting people who had previously got the right to be here or who expected to have the right to be here, then you are also going to, well, you're going to make life particularly worse for them. And the idea is that you'll celebrate. The average Brit will celebrate, as some Americans have done, seeing children being snatched off the street or seeing people who you were working alongside or living alongside last week being deported. So, you know, there's room for speculation, there's room for nuance, but there is sadly not room for facts anymore. And those three key facts have driven this entire conversation. Your average asylum seeker is simultaneously going to have their application approved and, as a consequence of Tory legislation, an illegal immigrant. The idea that people come here because it is measurably and demonstrably a better, quotes, offer, end quotes, than going elsewhere is not true. I mean, there are places that are more attractive and there are places that are less attractive. But the big drive comes from people who have family or language links to this country. And then the third thing is that they're all staying in the kind of hotel that you and I could barely afford ourselves if we wanted to spend a fortnight in Filey. And that's why the country has been torn apart by illegal immigration, to use Shabana Mahmood's words. The other phrase that's quite interesting, which isn't untrue, you say fighting age men instead of working age men, and you completely change the nature of the debate. But that debate is lost as well. There's no point saying working age men because that's dog bites man. You say fighting age men, you're trying to create the idea that they all want to fight you, rather than the idea that they all want to work. What do you think's more likely to be true? I'll show you 100 people that have come here via small boats. How many of them do you think want to fight you, and how many do you think want to work? You can have a fight anywhere. If they wanted to fight, they could have stayed in their own country and fought against whatever oppressive, tyrannical regime it is that would have locked them up and tortured them so that they were never heard of again in the case, of course, of Syria. But working, oh no, don't say working age. So the question that intrigues me most up first this morning is from the very first line of a piece that Shabana Mahmood has written for The Guardian. And it speaks absolutely to something that I've tried with some success to run up the flagpole in recent weeks. And it's this idea that you can... I think it was a lady in Telford. I was desperately trying to find the constituency that Labour is appealing to. And it's people who are not sort of nativist snarlers. They don't hate foreigners. They're not racist. They're not xenophobic. And they're not anti-immigration, but they are very exercised by the idea that the system is being abused. It was Tamara, I think. Tamara in Telford, a lifelong Tory. She may even have been a former councillor. And I wanted to find, and we found a few people that age, and we wanted to find the constituency that Labour seems increasingly to be convinced is both real, i.e. it exists, and winnable. So it's not your outrage addict. It's not your Billy Bunch of Numbers with a bulldog avatar and 307 flags on his Twitter profile. It's the person who has been persuaded that the system is being abused. And that's why I find this line from Shabana Mahmood. I don't want to argue with her because she's speaking from a position I don't inhabit. She's speaking as a woman of colour. I know some of these measures will face opposition. And here is the killer line, the key line, the absolutely crucial line. But a country without secure borders is less safe for those who look like me. So she insists that we will continue to offer sanctuary to those fleeing peril, even as she essentially introduces policies that would have seen us send kinder transport children back to Germany once the Nazis had been overthrown and Germany became, quote, safe again, end quotes. But she is arguing from the perspective that this will make life better, not for the sort of nativist snarlers that some people worry she's appealing to, but, if you like, for ethnic minority people who are here. Well, you see, if I say legally, then I'm including 90% of asylum applications over recent years. So I think the question I'm going to ask you is this. Who do you think she's appealing to? Oh, hand on heart, who do you think Shabana Mahmood is appealing to with policies that will see anyone with refugee status potentially forced to return to their home country if it becomes safe? People granted asylum, so genuine, bona fide applicants waiting 20 years before they can apply for permanent settlement. Ukrainians sent home once the conflict or the invasion by Russia has been settled. I don't know whether it would be one way or another. If Putin were to completely occupy Ukraine, would we send them back there? You'd have to hope not. But the line I've seen is that once the conflict with Russia has ended, there'll be no automatic housing or financial support for asylum seekers, which means they'll lose the £9 a week and the roof over their head that they currently get. Those are the key areas. And the key question, I'd like to get into the question about whether or not you, as somebody from an ethnic minority who is second, third generation or first generation, but here completely regularly, under completely normal and unextraordinary circumstances, whether you think these policies will make people less suspicious of you, less negative to you. But that's quite niche. I'm going to open this question this morning with one that absolutely everybody can answer. Okay, Shabana Mahmood is going to make life measurably harder for genuine refugees. Genuine refugees. Why? 0345 6060 973. Why do you think she's doing it? And who do you think this is designed to appeal to? Because I'll tell you, a lot of people who won't like it are currently sitting on the Labour backbenches behind her and her colleagues on the front bench. So those are the questions. We may get into whether we like the policies or not, but the keyhole for me this morning is that. Who is this designed to appeal to and or appease? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. 0345 6060 973. We'll move into the question of will it work, but we begin with who, when Shabana Mahmood announces later today plans to make genuine refugees' lives much tougher, and therefore, in her mind, it's less likely for genuine refugees, people truly fleeing war, fleeing persecution, fleeing famine, she wants to make it less likely that they will come here by making it less pleasant for them when they get here. Who is that designed to appeal to? 0345 6060 973. It's 10:21.
LBC.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
Oh! Hey, Mum, looks like someone's coming through the back gate.
Oh, it's not Barbara from Judo again, is it? I can't listen to any more about her new boiler.
Or about the time she saw a ghost in her downstairs loo.
No, it's okay, look. It's just a dodgy-looking bloke in a hoodie.
Oh, thank God.
Hey, you, clear off. We know Judo.
Always Know is at your door with Ring's new 4K security cameras. Available now at ring.com and Amazon.
James O'Brien on LBC.
Call 0345 6060 973.
23 minutes after 10 is the time. And look, underpinning all of this is my fear that you can't reason people out of positions that they have not been reasoned into. So even as we wave the white flag on the importance of facts when it comes to the difference, if you like, between an illegal migrant and an asylum seeker historically, or the concept of the UK being a soft touch, or even people waiting for their applications to be processed living in, quotes, 3, 4 or 5-star hotels. Even as the facts have failed to inform the opinions on all of those things, the Labour Party seems to me today to be doubling down on the idea that people can be reasoned out of their negativity. I'm not sure they've been reasoned into it, but I am, of course, open to persuasion. But that's the key constituency that Shabana Mahmood is targeting, people who she thinks can be reasoned out of their current position, their current unhappiness, their current negativity towards immigration in general or specific types of immigration. But if they haven't been reasoned into that with actual factual events and phenomena, then I don't know. I'm just a little bit pessimistic that people can be reasoned out of those opinions and out of those positions. So listen, there's no point just texting me Farage or reform. Obviously, I think that there is a hope contained within this that people currently falling for the lies and nonsense of those characters will be persuaded back towards the light by these policies. But I want you to tell me about the person that you think this will appeal to, as opposed to the genre, the person that you know, perhaps. Perhaps it's you. That's why I've got Tamara in Telford in my headlights this morning, because there are nice people who believe things that may not be true that Shabana Mahmood is trying to reach today. David's in Bayswater. David, what would you like to say?
Yeah, hi, James. Great to speak to you again. So I'm an immigrant, but I came in 74, so it's a very long time ago, and I came in under the Patriality Act, so it was quite a simple way of coming, not like the people coming on the boats, who it's a real struggle for. But I think the first thing I'd say is that there was a study done which proved that 90% of the people on the boats had thrown or didn't have documents. So I think that form of coming here has given a bad name to people coming to this country, because people do suspect most of them.
Where was that? I'd have to be careful to double check on things.
Honestly, it's a Home Office report. I don't doubt it,
but obviously by the time your application is approved, then your case and your identity will have been confirmed and established.
But James, what I'm saying is when someone doesn't have documents, it casts a pall over the whole thing. People think, why have you thrown away your documents? You're trying to hide something. So whether or not they're accepted, the public are going to suspect that these people have, you know, they're not coming here as proper refugees. I'm not against it myself because the
survey I can find is by Migration Watch, not the Home Office, and that's kind of like the propaganda wing of UKIP back in the day, so again, an organisation that exists to demonise and denigrate immigrants is probably not the place we should go first.
It's
important that we establish something first and foremost. If 90% of applications are processed successfully, or 75% or 80%, whatever the figure is, it shifts from year to year, but it's very much ballpark. Those are bona fide asylum seekers.
Well, okay, James, but I agree, but I'm
saying
it's
not an opinion, it's a fact. So this 90% figure...
James, can I just say this?
Well, no, you can't,
I've worked in a college...
You have to stop talking for a minute, okay?
Okay, right.
So the statistic you've provided is bogus, which means that your next position, the next point you make, is based upon a bogus presumption. The most important element of this conversation is the success rate of applications. They don't say to somebody who has no documents or no passport, they don't say to that person, oh, never mind, we're going to accept your application anyway. You're no longer an applicant. You are now a genuine refugee. That just never, ever, ever happens. So I'm sure it's possible to duck under the wire with a sophisticated, made-up backstory. But the point you've begun by making is untrue. And any point that you're then going to build on an untrue element is worthless. And now you're going to carry on talking.
Okay. Right, okay.
Because that's how these debates work, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Everything you've said is wrong, but your opinion hasn't shifted one jot.
Right. So, I've let you speak, and I checked what you said.
It wasn't true.
But James, I've given you a statistic. You said you don't believe it. Other people will believe it. Just because you don't believe it doesn't mean other people won't believe it.
Of course I do. It's not true, but people won't, believe it.
You can't prove that it's not true either. So the public will have seen things like that. No, you can't.
Okay, carry on.
How can you disprove it?
Well, because the applications are processed successfully. You cannot have your application processed without proving who you are.
The point I was saying that the people have the impression that people in the boat are not coming here as proper refugees. And a lot of people do believe that. That's what the problem, isn't it? It's the optics of the whole thing. And that's what's causing the problem. That's why Reform are getting votes. So people like you, and I'm an immigrant myself, so I have no reason to be against it. But I'm saying from the logical position I have, that it's a difficult position for the government to argue against because of the impression that's been created. And
falsely. An impression that's been created falsely.
Yes,
so how do you deal with...
James.
No, but but if you abandon the facts, you abandon the truth.
Well,
and that's what the government is doing. The government is now addressing people who believe things that they have no reason to believe.
Fact is another person's fiction. That's the point.
No, that's not true. You sound like Donald Trump now. There are facts and there are lies. There is truth and there is untruth. You don't get to pick your facts. You don't get to pick your numbers. The success rate for asylum applications. Listen, I think we can agree it doesn't matter. That battle is lost. Pointing out the difference between a genuine refugee and an illegal migrant is pointless to do it now because the Conservatives have successfully conflated the two. So let's accept your point. Let's pretend it doesn't matter whether it's true or not and that people believe it. If people believe something that's not true, how does a policy help them? How does treating people worse, sending Ukrainians back to Ukraine when the conflict with Russia is over, who is that designed to appeal to? Does it appeal to you?
No, what I'm trying to say is the government is caught in a bit of a bind, and I think that's why they're being very reactive. I don't think they're intentionally...
But who is it designed to appeal to? So let's just pick that one element of it. Sending Ukrainians back to Ukraine when the conflict with Russia is over. Who is going to go, yes, that's what I want to see? Are you?
I'm not. But then, see, I'm quite well off. I'm not in the position of a lot of poorer people.
And we're speculating about the existence of people who can't bear having Ukrainians enjoying shelter in this country and hope that the war is over soon so that we can get rid of them as well. I'm just not convinced those people exist. Shabana Mahmood is gambling an awful lot on their existence, but I'm not sure they do. And I mean, I'm sure you're right. Lots and lots of people believe things that aren't true. So you've played directly into that observation I made at the outset about whether or not you can reason people out of positions that they haven't been reasoned into. I don't think you can. It doesn't matter how many people believe it. If you start saying one man's fact is another man's fiction, then you're Donald Trump. Your alternative facts, your fake news. The facts no longer matter. Which makes Shabana Mahmood's mission, I would thought, absolutely impossible. This is Brexit. This is Brexit 2.0. It was probably inevitable, wasn't it, given that Brexit was sold on the back of immigration lies. It was probably inevitable that we'd come to a point where people, perfectly sensible people like David, are arguing. It doesn't matter whether it's true or not. Enough people believe it. And anyone who doesn't believe it is out of touch. It's not true. But enough people believe it for it to matter and for it to inform policy. And I'm very, very worried that that's where Labour is. It's saying, we know it's not true, but so many people believe it. Those are the policies that we need to make. And I just can't see that working. 10:32 is the time. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
The Conservatives have described the government's plan to overhaul the asylum system as largely gimmicks. The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, will set out changes later, aiming to make it easier to deport illegal migrants. The former Prime Minister of Bangladesh, Sheikh Hasina, has been sentenced to death for crimes against humanity. The 78-year-old who's in exile was found guilty of ordering security forces to kill hundreds of protesters last year. And a yellow cold health alert's in force for northern England and central parts of the country until Friday. Snow is also possible on higher ground in Scotland tomorrow. LBC weather dry and chilly for most. Some light rain for northern Scotland, a high of 9 degrees.
This is LBC.
Cybersecurity matters more than ever for businesses across the UK. LBC's been exploring how cyber attacks happen, who's behind them, and the steps you can take to protect your business.
Probably the number one route in would be phishing emails. Old software that's not been patched or updated is another classic way in. And then there's always those people that are clicking on links that they shouldn't do, provides a route through for those hackers.
Watch the full interview on our free Global Player app. Thanks to BT Business, LBC.
When it comes to retirement advice, the last thing you want is to be put in a bucket. Seen as this type of person or that type of person. At Fisher Investments UK, we never put you in a bucket. We always tailor retirement advice that's just right for you. Fisher Investments UK, retirement advice that's as individual as you are. Learn more at fisherinvestments.co.uk. Investing involves the risk of loss. Fisher Investments UK is regulated by the UK Financial Conduct Authority.
Welcome on board this LNER service from London King's Cross to Edinburgh. My name's Paul, your train manager today, and hang on, is that Scrabble tournament in coach here? Yes, G with an X is a word. Right, we're cruising at 125 miles per hour, same speed this lad next to me is typing. Someone's on a roll. The cafe bar's in coach G if you fancy a brew, or if you're mid-box set binge, just order through the QR code at your seat. We'll deliver it. So sit back and enjoy your journey. With LNER, it's freedom all the way.
Hillary's best ever Black Friday sale is now on, and it doesn't get any better than this, with an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, control your blinds from anywhere with a half-price smart hub when you buy any electric blind, with measuring and fitting always included. And word to the window wise. Order now for blinds and curtains fitted in time for Christmas. Book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10:35 is the time. And the other thing that I don't believe or that I really worry about is the conflation of people coming over in small boats, which is a tiny, tiny percentage of overall immigration with all the immigrants. So Shabana Mahmood, this is the bit, this is the crucial question. When I say who is she trying to appeal to, obviously there are some obvious answers to that question. But the people she would say she was trying to appeal to are people who are supremely comfortable with legal or regular migration, but have been successfully persuaded to have a massive problem with asylum seekers if they come here via the only route available to the massive majority of asylum seekers. That's the argument. You know, from the minute Farage turned up in Dover with his Fisher-Price binoculars, the writing was on the wall because newspapers can't help themselves. And with the amplification and the exaggeration of social media, what was already pretty toxic 10 years ago is absolutely hideous now. So immigration numbers are going to plummet. This is the thing that nobody ever mentions. Official immigration numbers are going off a cliff as we speak, right? Next time they're announced, it is feasible that by the time of the next general election, Keir Starmer is leading a government that has delivered what David Cameron promised, and that immigration will be down, net migration will be down to the tens of thousands. Don't, whatever you do, mention the fact that there's currently 25,000 vacancies in nursing, for example, but that is the direction of traffic. It's coming off a cliff. Everything that Shabana Mahmood is planning to announce today is directed at the relatively tiny percentage of immigration that is represented by people in boats and hotels. And I just think, even if she successfully cauterized that flow of humanity, if she successfully created a country that nobody wants to come to claim asylum, the problems wouldn't go away. I want to be wrong. I don't ever want to find out, because I'm proud of the fact that this country offers asylum and sanctuary to, albeit that with the Kinder transport, it wasn't actually the government. It was an organization of private citizens, but at least the government didn't outlaw it. The idea that she could cauterize that flow and the problems, the anger, the tearing the country apart would dissipate or disappear, I just don't believe it. And I'd love you to persuade me that it will. I mean, it's you she's talking to. I've got no problem at all, because they're going to deport Ukrainians. Who had that on their bingo list for a Labour government? I remember Boris Johnson was doing laps of honour about how welcoming and warm we were, and brackets, just don't mention the ethnicity, close brackets, but we love refugees if they're Ukrainian. We can't get enough of them. Shabana Mahmood's going to announce plans to deport them when the conflict with Russia is over. Which, I there's an ineluctable logic to it, but it's not very pretty. Who finds it attractive? Who likes it? Who and what is it designed to appeal to? Taz is in Birmingham. Taz, what do you reckon?
Hi, James. Nice to speak to you.
Likewise.
Well, first of all, to answer your question, I think that it's undoubtedly to attract the more the people going towards, I wouldn't say right wing, but people going towards Nigel Farage and reform, because Keir is sinking in popularity right now.
Yeah. But I don't think he can win those. I don't know. Can he win those?
I agree. He can't. So, I mean, it's a, kind of false premise, if you like, for them to do that. But there's also distracting from their failures, like, you know, the whole yo-yo budget. And, you know, people are sort of kind of mad now because of a variety of reasons. So they're kind of trying to take the eye off that. But if I may, I would actually like to mention something else that you were referring to earlier in your, you know, little commentary, which is the influence on actual migrants, like legal migrants, because as you have stated many times, that, you know, it's over 90% are legal migrants. Well, they're all legal, but, you know, like coming through regular routes, because the people that are coming desperately on boats that could sink and could kill them, they don't know about these policies. You know, if you look at what's been happening in Sudan and the trails of blood that are visible from space, I doubt that anything would put people off from those regions from trying to desperately flee to anywhere they could call home, right?
Well, yes, but my point would be, if I were a part of the constituencies that we're examining today, I said, yes, but they can stop somewhere else. It doesn't, you can accept the necessity of fleeing. You can accept the necessity of fleeing, but why do they have to come here? And then you create the myth that we do more than other countries, and you have your electoral leverage, don't you? Why do they have to come here?
Well, because you did Brexit, and now you no longer have the agreements that you had on, you know, the channel crossing.
That makes it harder to deport them, but Shabana Mahmood wants to make it the case that it's not even attractive. They won't want to come here because it's going to be even worse than it is already.
But they won't know that. That's the thing. That information is not going to be available to them, because the people traffickers are going to convince them. And because I remember seeing this article about Albania, and how there was, like, on TikTok there were ads by people traffickers saying, oh, come, you've got guaranteed jobs, because they want to earn their money as well. And also, like, people that are desperate, they'll want to go somewhere that feels like home. And like you said, many people speak English, and they'll want to come to the UK, or they'll have family here. So, you know, if you've seen your whole family being massacred and you're fleeing, you don't want to go to a country where you know no one, you don't speak the language. You want to go somewhere you feel comfortable. So,
but these arguments are lost. I mean, this is my hat trick of hogwash. The illegal migrant asylum seeker conflation, the soft touch lies, and as part of both of those, the 3-4-5 star hotel myths. That we've lost those arguments. It doesn't matter. No, you know, people will tell you they're not. That someone might. They might be true, but it doesn't matter. One man's fact is another man's fiction. And if those arguments have all been lost, if those facts have all been rendered redundant or irrelevant, then who's left for Shabana Mahmood to appeal to today?
I mean, there is no one. I mean, what she's doing is basically survival strategy for Labour, and also for herself. I mean, something that she says is true, what she says about it makes it more difficult for ethnic minorities like herself, yes, and also myself, is that, you know, when you're in a very hostile environment, you do anything to survive, right? And currently, I can tell you, as a Muslim woman, as a brown woman, as a hijabi woman, it is extremely toxic. It is extremely unwelcome.
And does that get better if people are persuaded that our borders have been...
No, of course not.
Are you sure? No, you're laughing at me.
I'm
just...
I'm laughing at the premise. I mean, you know, did it get better when they got rid of the Jews in Nazi Germany? No.
Okay, let me rephrase, because I'm thinking of people, some of whom I may hear from, sadly not on the phones anymore. They used to ring in, well, not sadly, but you know, they still text me, and they will not change their attitude towards you as a Muslim woman, as a hijabi. They are always going to be racist towards you. Okay, so they exist, but there are people who believe that the country is porous. There are people who believe that the, albeit that it's a tiny number of the overall figure, but people coming here via these irregular routes necessitated by Tory policy, they believe that they have a big impact on their life. They believe that they're the reason why they can't get an appointment at the NHS. And that blame or that anger, that migrates towards you, people who are not white, let's not beat about the bush, non-white people. I still think your giggling, your charming giggles notwithstanding, I still think they believe, as in Shabana Mahmood and her colleagues, believe there's a big difference between those two constituencies. There's the person who will always hate you for being brown, and then there's the person who doesn't have a racist bone in their body, to use the popular phrase, but thinks that it's too easy to come in here and avail yourself of public services. And if it is demonstrably harder to come here and avail yourself of public services, then that person stops blaming you or stops lumping you in with the problem. That's the theory, I think.
But immigrants can't avail public services anyway. So in terms of welfare...
Yeah, and that's also the fourth fact, isn't it, that we're going to have to put on the list that's been completely defeated.
I don't want to insult anyone, but I feel like people have been brainwashed by year after year of headlines saying immigrants this, refugees that. Mm. I mean, it's only, 37,000 people that came on the boat, but over 90% migration is legal. And if I may just speak a little bit on that, if you don't mind, because
of course, yeah,
that's going to really affect us. So in my family, say, although I'm first generation, almost everyone in my family has come to the UK, done higher studies and gone back. PhDs, masters, you name it. I stayed behind for a variety of reasons. I'm one of the only two people that stayed behind. But what's happened now is those people no longer want to come. I mean, if you look at PhD students from Bangladesh, before, the vast majority, because there was a link, the Commonwealth, there's a feeling that this was also our home, because, we are brought up in Bangladesh, well, we used to be anyway, with English culture, with English language, with, little things that were left over from colonization that endeared us to this country, right? So people would come here and feel at home, but now that is no longer the case. People have other countries on their list. So we're going to lose the bright minds that would come here, that would contribute to research, that would, maybe some of them would stay on and, do really amazing things, or maybe they would just be skilled people, and not to mention the doctors and nurses. I'm actually a retired doctor,
right. And
I'm also a patient. And I can tell you, the way, as it, my patient experience and my medic experience, the way I've seen the leeching of staff, especially after Brexit, like, we've got, the last time I was admitted, it was to a renal ward, and I was a very sick patient. There was only like four nurses in a massive ward, and there were healthcare workers, assistants as well. But it's so woefully understaffed. We've got nurses going off because they're so burnt out. We've got people committing suicide because they're burnt out. It's awful. And the truth is, we cannot survive without immigration. We just simply do not have the numbers. So to create this toxic conversation where immigrants are the bogeymen, they're the ones to blame for everything, the people that's going to hurt are the people in this country, just like Brexit.
It is exactly like Brexit, except the stakes are even higher because they're more human than fiscal. Just in case anybody thinks that Taz is exaggerating, there's a survey published today by the Royal College of Nursing of 20,000 UK nursing staff, found that 2/3 were working while ill multiple times a year. That's up from 49% in 2017. 25,000 jobs are currently unfilled, and 70% of nurses are working beyond their contracted hours. That's as things are now, just as the Home Secretary gets to grips with the business of making the country considerably less attractive a destination for precisely the sort of people that you're talking about. And the figure for people who go back to their country of origin anyway stands, I think, at about 40%. So there's another little myth that never really gets aired. So you dismiss all of Shabana Mahmood's fond imaginings, I think, that this will make life easier for people.
I think that this is a very harmful distraction to the conversations that do need to happen in this country regarding the NHS, regarding the education system, regarding the economy, regarding the roads and the trains and the water systems. Those are the conversations we need to have, because there are serious problems we've got. I live in Birmingham, James. There's huge amounts of poverty here. There's so many children living in poverty. The immigrants are not to blame for that. The immigrants living in premier inns that are, you know, completely converted into some, you know, horrible situation, they're not to blame for that. We need to fix that right now. Why are there children going hungry in this country? I'm so angry about that. I'm so angry about the NHS when I see saw my colleagues going to the food bank, when I saw my colleagues burnt out. You know, it's
And that will get worse, not better, as a consequence of what, or at least you think it will, and I fear it will, as a consequence of what Shabana Mahmood is announcing today. So who is it designed to appeal to? Taz, thank you. A couple of answers from my inbox. Steve, responding to Taz, saying that people like her family, doctors and the like, are less likely to want to come here now. O'Brien's only callers are migrants or second-generation migrants. You're a joke. No prizes for guessing how Steve spells your. So when he hears that people coming here to treat him and his children are now less likely to come, he celebrates. And David, who I think is probably in the lead for the Applications for Idiots Corner this morning, listening to the same call from Taz, writes, this caller just blown your case out of the water. Her family came, studied, got PhDs, then left. Give up, mate. I mean, just a quick refresher on what the current rules are for foreign students coming here to study up to PhD level, David, because without them, most of our universities would be facing even greater financial peril than they currently are. So I think to rephrase your text, people come here from other countries, pay through the absolute nose to study to a very high level, subsidize British-born students as a consequence of the fees that they're paying, work for a while, and then go back to their country of origin. So no refugees or asylum seekers contained within this conversation, which is all that we're talking about today, but also that's all good, mate, for this country. We get the fees from the universities, we get the benefit of the qualified people, and if they're going to go back to their country of origin when they reach an age at which they're more likely to become a drain on the state, i.e. pension age, then for people like you, if you could actually add two and two and come up with four, you'd be celebrating. Hey-ho. And that's what I mean. It's people like David and Steve that I worry Shabana Mahmood is trying to appeal to, and they both struggle to spell their own name, let alone understand the nuance of policy, reality, fact and fiction. It's 10 to 11.
This is LBC.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruits. Eligibility criteria apply.
Train to Brighton with the besties.
Immaculate vibes, as always. But I bet my ice skating is going to be pure chaos.
Oh, Em, you better hold my hand. Oh, I'm going up.
No, styled it out. I've got this.
Last one to the other side buys the hot chocolate.
Back on the train. Only fell twice.
Low-key legend.
We have to do this every year.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel and off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
Waitrose presents...
I really fancy a mince pie.
One man's selfless journey from sofa to kitchen.
I'm getting up.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots and zesty limoncello.
With some cream...
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, zesty limoncello, and a dollop of fresh cream.
Limoncello.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores subject to availability.
This year, Amazon are increasing the electric delivery vehicles we use across Europe to 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of. Where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts. And where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters. On your doorstep. Delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
10:53 is the time. We haven't moved on really to the question of whether it's likely to work, because you can't do that until you've identified who it is supposed to appeal to. And I don't want a uniformly negative response to that question. I like this from Amanda. I think she's appealing to me, James. I'm an English middle-of-the-road sort from the working class who votes Labour. I think I might be called Blue Labour. I was brought up in council housing, so I've benefited from that very much. I'm very sympathetic to asylum seekers, but people are finding things very hard in this country. If she doesn't do this, we will get Farage or something worse, I'm afraid. That's how I'm feeling. I think it will calm things down and set boundaries. And then, I mean, respectfully to Amanda, I can buy that until I read what the policies are, you see. I don't know anyone who is going to be jumping for joy at the prospect of deporting Ukrainians back to post-war Ukraine. I just don't. Or people who can make a compelling case, because I think Ukrainian refugees were allowed to work. So the argument, well, I know they were. So even there's no real argument that people are going to be a net cost as opposed to a net benefit. I think I've seen research on that. That's the problem, isn't it? Who is this designed to appeal to? And if you've already got worries, as I do, then compare the article that Shabana Mahmood has written for the Sun newspaper with the article that she's written for The Guardian, and I suspect those worries will be compounded. But it's to The Times that I turn next for a letter to Professor Tanya Byron, who runs a sort of rather more highbrow than the average advice column. And this is her correspondent in today's paper. My 73-year-old father has become obsessed with politics, or rather with shouting about it online. He spends hours on social media, arguing with strangers, posting furious comments and sharing articles that make my wife and me wince. He used to be thoughtful and kind, now he's permanently angry, convinced that he sees, quotes, the truth, end quotes, and anyone who disagrees is, quotes, brainwashed. He rants about woke nonsense, elites, and that he has a duty to halt the decline of common sense. And Professor Byron provides a very powerful and quite moving account of how you can at least try to pop these bilious balloons. She provides the psychology to explain what's going on with him. He's in something called allostatic overload, which means his stress system is stuck in fight or flight mode. So the brain can't reset, can make himself poorly. Anyone challenging his beliefs becomes part of the perceived threat. This explains some of the negativity in Idiot's Corner. Anybody challenging these things that you've persuaded yourself are true becomes part of the problem. So the woke or the elite incite really violent verbiage in these kinds of people, including this man who until relatively recently was a lovely father and grandfather. And that is part of the problem. Can Shabana Mahmood's policy reach men like that? On the problem page in the Times today. I don't think it can. If it's a psychological problem that you've got, is there really an intellectual or a political solution? I'll give you an idea. There is speculation that these policies would involve the confiscation of jewellery from asylum seekers. That's Britain in 2025. And even speculation about such a policy is unthinkable to those of us who can remember Britain in 2015 or 2012. The confiscation of jewellery. And whenever I read out messages like that, I get messages like this. Julie writes, that's my mum and dad. And to prove the point about the, I like that phrase, allostatic overload. It died in the wall. The phrase is wall, mate, but I'm here to help. Died in the wall, liberals like you, followed by a rude word that I can't say on the radio. So, you know, my inbox provides really powerful evidence of allostatic overload, but it's not a rational position to be in. What is the rational anti-immigrant? I don't know. We may take some more calls after the news, because I'm still fascinated by how on earth this is supposed to work. Malik's in Leicester, and then it'll be Craig in Great Yarmouth if there's time. Malik, what would you like to say?
Hi, good morning to you, sir. And, I've been here in this country since 2002, and never have I in my life up until now seen such a bizarre situation. You said, who's she serving? I think it is for the self-preservation kind of a thing, in my opinion, because they are in fear of a party whose leader is supposed to take his data from a cab driver. No offense to the cab drivers, but this
well,
is
no, that was that was. You're talking
offering.
About Farage, I think, and knowing his background like I do, I would suggest to you he made up the conversation he had with a taxi driver.
Yeah. So
and even
are.
If he
so
did, this is the bloke
losing...
who this is the bloke who told him that Sharia law was on the way. It's based on a conversation with a taxi driver, and of course his responses to the terrible crimes in Southport last year was based upon the social media account of a man facing sex trafficking trial. But here we go.
Indeed.
But how does that work, though? I mean, that's because what you're doing, you're jumping ahead. So that okay. there need to be a lot of people who will think more warmly about the government in the event of these policies being introduced. And I don't know who they are. I don't know that they exist, those people, Malik.
See, I am as skeptical as you are because...
Right.
In my understanding, people even actually do not understand between the difference of an immigration and asylum seekers. What they are doing, they are co-equating the two. For example, you're talking about economic migrants.
Yep.
And I have been told since 2019 and up until now, there have been 900,000 immigrants arrived. Right. You do a simple math. I ask your producers to ask Home Office how much visa money they have provided. It's £2,000 per person, which is £18 billion. Then £1,000 for NHS surcharge, which is another £9 billion. So even before these economic migrants put their foot on the UK soil, they have contributed £27 billion. In the course of 5 years, without any national insurance or tax, just in terms of the visa fee and the NHS surcharge, they will be contributing £54 billion. You can check me, correct me, educate me. I'm
no, I don't. I don't need to. I know that you're telling the truth. And I mean, the visa costs, and you haven't included student costs and tuition fees and things that are going into our
not
education.
Counting them.
Although David gets very cross about the idea of people coming here and reading books. But I'm going to put that on the list as well. So I'm not by nature a pessimist, and I'm certainly not defeatist, but these arguments have been lost to the liars. All of these arguments have been lost to the liars, and the government now seems to me to be legislating in a world of lies.
Yeah, because I tell you why. Because nobody's paying attention to what is the economic of this of this country. The politician whose job is to improve the economy, they are using this as a tool to scapegoat. Nobody is paying attention to what is coming in the budget. This is, in my understanding, is a diversion tactic. By the time we have been bombs exploded on our pockets, the government is finding different ways to sift the money out of our pockets. What is it?
I think we're going to stay with elements of this conversation in the next hour, because here's a question I've never asked anybody before. How does it end? How does this rhetorical cycle end? If not with measurable and obvious improvements to our cost of living, which I can't see appearing anytime very soon on the horizon, and which is likely to be compromised by the imminent collapse in overall net migration figures, partly for the reasons that Malik has alluded to. This another one, the idea that immigration is itself a drain on our economy. It's simply not true. So Labour seems to be legislating in a world of lies rather than challenging the lies. You might argue they've got no choice, looking at the opinion polls where the liars are doing really, really well. So what do? If you can't beat them, join them. How does it end? How does this rhetorical revolution end? That's a question, isn't it? How do you, because, I mean, for years we've been laughing at people saying you can't talk about immigration in this country without being called a racist, when all we do in this country is talk about immigration, and most of us manage never to say anything that would label us racist. But well, how does it end? Shabana Mahmood thinks she can end it by making life harder for refugees, deporting Ukrainians, and taking jewellery away from people who are fleeing war. I'm going to say that again because it's breaking my heart. Shabana Mahmood thinks she can end the rancid rhetoric around race and immigration in this country by deporting Ukrainians and confiscating jewellery from refugees. It's 11:02.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Home Secretary is due to set out sweeping reforms to the UK's asylum system later. Shabana Mahmood is planning to change human rights law to make the deportation of illegal migrants easier. People will also have to wait 20 years before they can apply to settle here permanently. But the Shadow Home Office Minister Matt Vickers has told LBC more radical changes are needed.
There are some small steps in the right direction in this, but there are, as ever, the government's approach to immigration is characterised by gimmicks. We saw the one-in, one-out scheme, where actually since they started the scheme, 16,500 people have arrived in the country and 99.5% of them have got to stay. They said they were going to smash the gangs. There's a distinct lack of gang smashing going on.
The former Prime Minister of Bangladesh, Sheikh Hasina, has been sentenced to death for crimes against humanity. Hasina, who's in exile, was found guilty of ordering security forces to kill hundreds of protesters last year. The 78-year-old has refused to recognise the court and says the verdicts are politically motivated. A vote's expected in Congress this week after Donald Trump changed his stance on the release of files about Jeffrey Epstein. The president is now urging Republicans to vote to publish them in full, saying they have nothing to hide. Mr. Trump's been under pressure from his own party to make them public. Former US Vice President Mike Pence says he's relieved about the U-turn.
It's altogether fitting that the Congress, now with the president's support, will be moving legislation to release all the Epstein files. And he said he's done nothing wrong. I hope we can move past this and begin to deal with some of the major issues.
A court in Singapore has sentenced an Australian man to 9 days in jail for grabbing the Hollywood actress and singer Ariana Grande. Johnson Wen has been found guilty of being a public nuisance. Videos online showed the 26-year-old jumping barriers at the Asia premiere for the new Wicked film last week. And a yellow cold health alert's in force in northern and central England until Friday. Snow is possible on higher ground in Scotland and parts of England tomorrow. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 15 at 96.82. The pound buys $1.31 and a euro 13. LBC weather, dry and chilly for most today. Some light rain for the north of Scotland with a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
The Virgin Media Black Friday sale is here. Enjoy 3 months of show-stopping entertainment totally free. That's caught your attention. Like an elephant cruising on a truck through the bright lights of Bangkok. You get Netflix at no extra cost, channels you love, and lightning-fast broadband too. Yeah, that's Black Friday, the Virgin Media way. Visit virginmedia.com. Virgin Fibre areas. User speed and month full price depends on package choice. Netflix terms of use apply. Ends 10th of December. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Six minutes after 11 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I mean, how many people genuinely greet this element of today's news with glee? I just dread to think, frankly. Asylum seekers could have jewellery or other valuables taken to pay for the costs of processing their cases, a Home Office minister has said. So I said speculation a moment ago, and because of the word could in that sentence, I guess technically it gets filed under speculation. They could have their jewellery taken. But this is Britain in 2025, where Alex Norris, the Home Office Minister, has said that while this would not involve seizing wedding rings, jewellery without sentimental value could be taken. I mean, who on earth, even in Idiot's Corner, who celebrates that? I honestly don't know. I haven't been on Twitter for God knows how long, but I presume Billy Buncher Numbers with a bulldog avatar and 73,000 flags in his profile loves it, but I don't know whether those accounts are real or whether they're sort of parts of banks of bot farms in St. Petersburg. Probably you could find somebody in Farage's outfit or Kemi Badenoch's Tory party who would celebrate that kind of thing, but this is a Labour Home Office minister. What did you go into politics for, lads? I really want to take jewellery off refugees. Any historical precedents for that spring to mind? Yeah, of course they do. God forbid Gary Lineker points it out, because the Daily Mail would lynch him for his trouble. But that is very reminiscent of episodes in not too distant history, isn't it? I'm reading that in Britain in 2025. I think they've done something similar in Denmark. But that has become the inspiration for Shabana Mahmood. And listen, you know how my brain works. Well, you might not, but if you listen on a vaguely regular basis, then you will have some idea of how my brain works. Even as I state something is hideous, even as I express utter disbelief at what we appear to be becoming as a country, I wonder whether I'm missing something. I wonder whether there is a sensible, rational case for taking jewellery off refugees, taking jewellery off asylum seekers. Oh, we won't actually take any jewellery. We're just going to tell them that so they don't come here. I'm not sure that's any better, is it? It's not the big element of what's been announced. It may not end up being an element of what is going to be announced later. But who sits in judgment on what's sentimental value? I just wonder who this is supposed to appeal to. So if you're struggling with the broader question, because you can't think who it is, imagine how much you're going to struggle with the idea of taking jewellery off people. Who sits there now going, I love it. I love it. And, of course, we live in a country at the moment where we suspect there are probably more people than we ever realised who would celebrate the confiscation of jewellery from asylum seekers, or fighting age men, if you prefer. But I don't think they're going to say it out loud at this point in the rhetorical cycle, are they? And that's just what comes next. It's all about what comes next. They'll say it next, well, they'll say it out loud. So right now, there are people listening to this program going, yeah, I love it. Do you remember Lily Pullman's Father's Watch? Do you remember that? I'm not sure I can tell you that story with the absence of emotion that perhaps is needed. But my friend, my late friend Lily, who dedicated her life to campaigning against hatred of all kinds, was hidden from the Nazis as a child, and told me a story about the moments when you realised things were really changing. And it was when the caretaker of her apartment block in Lviv, actually. And now I get geographically confused. It's on the Ukrainian-Polish border, and at that point, at the outbreak of the Second World War, it was on the other side to the side that it's on now. But the caretaker just took his watch, took her dad's watch, because he could, because they were scared, and they knew what was happening. And that idea of having lived in the same building as someone for 20 years, not realizing that he was looking at your watch and your Jewishness and feeling bilious envy. And at the first opportunity, he took the watch. I might play you the clip later. Maybe not today, but that is the first thing I thought of. Oddly, because that's just one man. But he's the kind of guy who would be celebrating the removal of jewelry from refugees. And apparently, we've become the kind of country where we take jewellery from refugees. So, how does it end? And by that, I simply mean, if, like me, you have historically found it ridiculous for people to argue that you can't talk about immigration in this country, or we never talk about immigration in this country, or the silent majority are obsessed with immigration but can't talk about it, given that it's been on front pages, it's been on phone-in shows, it's been everywhere for as long as I can remember, but for the last 10 years it's often felt like the only story in town. How does that, because this is the calculation Shabana Mahmood is trying to make, and I think she's got it horribly wrong. But such is my naivety or idealism that I hope I'm wrong, and that actually she does manage to appease people who aren't snarling nativists, but who have, quotes, legitimate concerns, end quotes. I just can't quite see how wanting refugees to have their jewellery confiscated is going to appeal to people with, quotes, legitimate concerns, end quotes. But how is this rhetorical cycle spiked? Do you see what I mean? What does a government have to do to stop the population being so susceptible to anti-immigrant rhetoric? How does it stop working? That's the point. So you're going to have Farage over there wanging on about it all the time, regardless. Even if the immigration figures reach zero, he'll claim that you can't trust them. He'll call them fake news or alternative facts. So you're going to have that. And, of course, he is carried shoulder high by the likes of the Daily Mail and the Daily Telegraph and the Daily Express. And, of course, Elon Musk has bought Twitter so that the racists can go largely unchallenged on the massive public space. How does a politician silence that noise? And just for the record, I haven't got a clue. And if it turns out that you do it like this, you do it like Shabana Mahmood is doing it, then what do? Celebrate, breathe a sigh of relief, or just mourn the passing of a happier, kinder, more compassionate age? But how do you close down this conversation? How do you silence the fears of people who fear things that largely don't exist? That's the problem. So there's no more asylum seekers in this country. We've shut all the hotels. No one's going to come anymore, because if they do, we'll nick their jewellery. Does everybody then go back to being nice to each other? Or what do we become then? I honestly don't know how it ends. How does this cycle of rhetoric end? Without the cost of living going down, without everything getting better, without waiting lists getting shorter, none of which is more likely to happen as a consequence of reducing immigration, most of which is more likely not to happen as a consequence of reducing immigration. But what would the world look like? What would it take to make this program sound stupid if we came on air in the morning and said, give me a ring if you hate immigration? I don't know the answer. I don't know if there isn't. If ego is a challenge, I haven't got a Scooby-Doo, so I bet you haven't either. That, by the way, is me trying to sting you into action. But imagine if I was a more traditional phone-in host, and whenever it was a slightly slow news day, I'd just invite you to tell me why you hate immigration, or why you don't want an asylum processing centre anywhere near you, or why you don't believe the fact, or believe the evidence, or believe the figures, or why fighting age men is a phrase that you prefer to use to any other, or why. Imagine I presented a traditional radio phone-in programme that encouraged you on an almost daily basis to blame immigrants for the actions of all the politicians that I told you to vote for. Imagine I presented a traditional radio program that encourages you to blame immigrants for the economic impact of the Brexit that I told you to vote for, or the Boris Johnson that I told you to vote for. What would it take for this to be a country where that, me, I, as a traditional radio phone-in presenter, encouraging you to blame immigrants for all the things that have happened as a consequence of the things I told you to vote for, what would it take for that not to land anymore, for that invitation to be laughed at, dismissed? I have no idea. But Shabana Mahmood thinks that confiscating jewellery from refugees, deporting Ukrainians, and making people who have fled war, pestilence and famine wait 20 years to have any sense of security while they live here is going to make your Auntie Doris and your Uncle Keith feel better about the stuff they keep reading on Facebook. And I just can't believe it. I want to. Help me. Help me believe it. Mike writes, she's appealing to people like my mum and dad. By no means racists or flag wavers. They don't share my left-wing view on things, but they're honest, fair people, genuinely concerned with the immigration system as a whole. There's nothing left-wing, James, about insecure borders. I don't know. I mean, I ask them, Mike, which bits they like most. The deporting the Ukrainians, the confiscating jewellery, or the making people wait 20 years before they can call this place home, even if they've run away from President Assad's murder squads, or the Taliban, or whatever it may be. I hope you're right, mate. I really do. But I don't think your mum and dad have been reasoned into whatever position it is that they currently hold. And if you haven't been reasoned into something, can you really be reasoned out of it? 11:17 is the time. Have a crack at that. Have a crack at the question of what it would take for the rhetoric to be defused. And I am being a little bit facetious and a bit cheeky when I say I don't think you can. But that's me being a bit arrogant, because if I can't, then I am tempted to think it must be impossible. But what does it look like? What does it look like when that rhetoric has been removed? When Farage is rendered ridiculous once again? When the... I mean, can you really tackle people who blame immigration for everything they've done for as long as those problems remain? So as long as the impacts of Brexit, the impacts of Boris Johnson, the impacts of austerity, the impacts of Liz Truss, as long as those things all remain real, can you ever take away the weapons that the racists deploy to try to pretend that it's all the fault of immigrants and immigration? I don't know. And I don't think you do either, but the phone lines are open.
This is LBC.
Hillary's best ever Black Friday sale is now on, and it doesn't get any better than this, with an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, control your blinds from anywhere with a half-price smart hub when you buy any electric blind, with measuring and fitting always included. And word to the window wise. Order now for blinds and curtains fitted in time for Christmas. Book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
Welcome on board this LNER service from London King's Cross to Edinburgh. My name's Paul, your train manager today, and hang on, is that a Scrabble tournament in coach here? Yes, G with an X is a word. Right, we're cruising at 125 miles per hour, same speed this lad next to me is typing. Someone's on a roll! The cafe bar's in coach G if you fancy a brew, or if you're mid-box set binge, just order through the QR code at your seat. We'll deliver it. So sit back and enjoy your journey. With LNER, it's freedom all the way.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 991234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
20 minutes after 11. I'm not the only one wondering where exactly in the defence of Judeo-Christian values confiscating jewellery from refugees fits. But I do want to know how it ends, in a way. How will we end up in a country where people are not successfully blaming immigrants for everything that we don't like? Craig's in Great Yarmouth. Craig, what would you like to say? What have you got?
I'm sorry. I'm going to sound rather depressing because I think this doesn't end well.
Do you know what, mate? I think on a day that a Home Office minister from a supposedly left-wing party, never mind a right-wing party, which would be depressing enough, floats the notion of refugees having jewellery confiscated, if you're not depressed, there's something a bit wrong with you.
I think, to be honest, this started probably about 30 years ago. I think we've allowed this to happen, in that we've constantly been fed by the tabloid press and the right-wing media, that it's given a voice to people who genuinely spread untruths, and we soak them up. 30 years ago, we're seeing tabloid news reports of bendy bananas and Yorkshire puddings not being allowed to be called Yorkshire puddings unless they're actually made in Yorkshire, and it all sounds like absolute madness, and we all buy into it. I mean, I was a teenager, my family bought tabloid newspapers, we read them, I thought it was crazy, absolutely ridiculous, and that kind of ill feeling towards the continent, towards anybody outside
it's
of
back,
the UK.
Actually, I won't tell, there, it's back today. There is, bizarrely, you could almost get nostalgic about it, but there's a claim that the EU is coming after our oatcakes today. I may share that with you a little later in the programme, but I don't know if it'll cheer you up much. How does it end then? Because I think you're right to put it in the context of three decades. And you think of the Murdoch tabloids of that era and beyond, and the ease with which they shift from denigrating foreigners and immigrants to denigrating Liverpudlians. It doesn't really matter who the target is, as long as you can be violent about them. But how does it end in the current cycle? How do we get back to a kind of 2012 kind of vibe?
To be honest, I think the only way, I'm not sure we can, unfortunately. I think it's going to be a generational thing, but my hope would be that people who are in the public spotlight, we have those people who have a platform, like the person you keep mentioning. I think that he needs to be, people like him who are saying things that are untrue, there needs to be stronger rules and regulations, especially if they've got a voice and a platform on the mainstream media. You know, people shouldn't be allowed.
It sells tickets, mate.
It does, and it does.
And no one at the Daily Mail or the Daily Telegraph or in certain radio presenters or TV presenters, none of them are going to go, oh, hang on, this isn't true. They're going to say this got 700,000 views or this got 400 million clicks. Let's do more of that tomorrow. And that is, every media organisation, with the possible exception of the BBC, is pretty much worshipping at that altar now. It's only a stroke of luck that I managed to get big numbers by swimming in the opposite direction. If I didn't, I'd be toast tomorrow.
Yeah, and I mean, look at that. To everybody who disagrees with you, you're a left wing nut, and so they don't listen to you. It doesn't matter what facts you put out there. It doesn't matter what facts that you give, how much evidence you provide. If their cognitive dissonance outweighs anything else, doesn't it? And so, you know, I'm a liberal lefty teacher who's teaching a curriculum by the liberal elite, which is completely ignores the fact that I'm still kind of working to a curriculum that was largely informed by Michael Gove, as education secretary. So I don't think this ends well. I think that if anything, I think this continues to ramp up. I don't think Labour have helped this at all, but I think that
what would help, not to make excuses for Labour, but what would help?
I think that Labour perhaps, I'd like to think they're trying to play a bit of a long game in that we can't affect lasting change if we're kicked out of government after one term.
No.
And so they're playing to that crowd, and the my hope is they're playing to that crowd to try and appease, in the sense that we can kind of slowly drip feed some reasonable behaviour in there and change.
But they've got numbers coming that, I mean, overall, they've got numbers coming on net migration that would, David Cameron would have given his left leg for those kind of statistics, those kind of figures. Partly as a consequence of Tory policies, partly as a consequence of Labour policies, partly because, for perfectly understandable reasons, we've become a much, and partly because of Brexit, of course, because of freedom of movement being abolished, and partly because we've become a much less attractive option for people looking at a variety of options when it comes to their sort of cosmopolitan mobile future. So we know that the big picture is heading in the direction that these kind of people want. The little picture, the 39 or 40,000 people who've crossed the channel in small boats dominate the discourse. If they are somehow removed from the discourse, what happens to the discourse? Do we all calm down and start getting on with each other again?
No, we'll shift. The narrative will be shifted towards another scapegoat, won't it?
Yeah, but it won't work as well. It won't work as well. I mean, this is the point about, race baiters, is that they need something juicy. You could go after single mothers, or you could go after the unemployed, or you could go after kids with anxiety, but it wouldn't reach this scale, because there is something visceral and primal about seeing people crossing water in boats to come to this country. And if you've managed to successfully typify them all as invaders or fighting age men, then it pushes buttons inside people that I don't think single mothers and unemployed people will ever quite push in the same way.
No, and that is what, I mean, you know, selective reporting. I mean, you know, how quickly was it buried, the boat that sank about 4 or 5 weeks ago, where among the fatalities it was listed as women and children, and that news story just excuse the pun, but sunk, didn't it?
It didn't get the coverage that you'd expect, because it doesn't get the clicks and it doesn't get the response and it doesn't feed the outrage economy that Tanya Byron writes about brilliantly in the Times today, addressing someone whose 73-year-old father has fallen entirely into this space. We hear it a lot on the programme. He's in allostatic overload, she writes, meaning his stress system is stuck in fight or flight mode, exhausting the brain's ability to reset, risking negative health outcomes. Anyone challenging his beliefs is woke or elite and becomes a perceived threat, fueling his self-appointed duty to defend common sense. And, to get medical about it, she writes, your father's prefrontal cortex, the brain's reasoning and empathy center, shuts down, while the limbic system, the emotional threat center, takes charge, driving instinctive fear and anger. And that, it seems to me, is what Shabana Mahmood is trying to appeal to today. Not the frontal, the prefrontal cortex. I didn't actually know that you could medicalize this theory I have about not being able to reason people out of things they haven't been reasoned into. It's not my line, by the way. But your prefrontal cortex, where reasoning and empathy operate, shuts down. Your limbic system, your emotional threat center, or your sort of adrenalized fight or flight condition, takes charge. And that means instinctive fear and anger are the order of the day. And can anything Shabana Mahmood is set to announce in the House of Commons today address people whose limbic system has taken charge? And how do we tell the difference? This is the thing that has fascinated me now for the best part of a year. It's why Tamara in Telford's shadow looms large over all of these conversations. How can you reach people's prefrontal cortex with these kind of policies? Who is going to go, I am a rational, thoughtful, empathetic person, but I'm unhappy with the status quo. If you, and then pick whichever one of these you like the most, if you make people wait 20 years before they can have settled status, I will be a lot more amenable to immigration. If you start confiscating jewelry from refugees, I will be a lot more relaxed about immigration and a lot more empathetic to refugees. If you are allowed to deport Ukrainians, then I, as a reasonable, empathetic person, will become a lot less exercised by immigration, whether legal or illegal. You see my point. This is the bit I don't get. Break it down like Professor Byron has done in the Times today, between the prefrontal cortex and the limbic system, and it seems to me that Shabana Mahmood is trying to address the consequences of people's limbic system by deploying their prefrontal cortex, and that doesn't work. Most of what I see and hear is emotional. It is instinctive fear and anger. And it's not an accident. That's why they say fighting age, men. It's instinctive fear and anger. It's why one sex offender in one hotel somehow becomes emblematic of every refugee, every asylum seeker. It works. What am I trying to do? I'm trying to excite your instinctive fear and anger. What's O'Brien trying to do? Oh, he's trying to excite your prefrontal cortex, your rationality and your empathy. What a fool. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
The Home Secretary is facing a growing backlash from Labour backbenchers over her plans to reform the asylum system. As part of the changes due to be announced later, Shabana Mahmood will outline an overhaul of human rights law. A court in Bangladesh has sentenced the former Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina to death. She was convicted of crimes against humanity for ordering a crackdown on last year's mass uprising. And several weather warnings for snow and ice have been issued by the Met Office. They cover much of Scotland and parts of Northern England tonight and tomorrow. LBC weather, dry and chilly for most today. Light rain for Northern Scotland, a high of 9 degrees.
This is LBC.
A Southern train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Waitrose presents.
And the main event.
One cook learns that love doesn't always shout.
Enough for me.
Sometimes it whispers.
I saved you best bit, Dad.
Starring succulent number one free-range turkey bauble wrapped in dry-cured beetroot smoked bacon with cranberry jeweled pork stuffing and orange glaze.
Ooh, thanks.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Subject to availability and delivery slots, available to order online and in stores from 19th of December.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helps advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Our pets in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Okay, let's have another go. I am not a nasty person, right? I am using my prefrontal cortex, not my limbic system. But I just don't care about refugees. I wish I could. If the country was in a better condition, if the cost of living was lower, if the NHS waiting lists were shorter. But I think that kind of compassion is a luxury that we can't afford as a country. I'm trying to imagine the mindset of the person that will respond positively to what Shabana Mahmood is describing. And I'm not doing it from a position of condescension or sneering. There's another story in the news today about the percentage of people who earn over £125,000 a year who completely dispute the idea that they're rich. Now, it's very easy to dismiss that in a moment, but I understand that position. And I also understand the position of somebody at the other end of the economic scale, or perhaps halfway down it, who just thinks that as a country, everything feels so frayed that regardless of the fiscal realities, if it's costing anything to look after these people, then right now we can't afford it. Let's get our house in order, and then we can go back to being the warm and welcoming country that we want to be. Does that sound daft to you? Does that sound bonkers? Or does it sound like your inner voice? I'm not racist. I'm not xenophobic. I'm not cruel. I'm not frightened. I'm not angry. I'm just looking around at a country where everything is fraying at the seams. And I know that it was largely caused by Conservative governments and the people who told us to vote for Brexit. But it doesn't matter what caused it. It's who we are and where we are now. And as long as we are there, looking after refugees and asylum seekers is a luxury that we can't really afford. So we need to stop accepting them, and we need to wave goodbye regretfully to the ones that we've already accepted. And if we have to accept them, then we're going to take their jewelry off them. Is that who she's appealing to? I'm trying today. I'm reaching. I really am. It's important that there is this person. I'm not racist. I'm not xenophobic. I'm none of these things. And it doesn't matter whether it's true or not economically, whether this is a major factor in our economic reality. It feels like it is. So just as some people have been persuaded to be frightened of asylum seekers, so many others have been persuaded to consider them responsible for our economic situation, or a large contributor, a major contributor to our economic situation. So while things are this bad, I don't want my politicians to be worrying about them. I want them to be worrying about me. And then the lines about paying tax, and the lines about parents and grandparents, and the lines about all the other things actually have a sort of resonance. Now, it's taken me an hour and a half to come up, because you haven't called me to tell me that this is you. You like the idea. Because the minute you tell me you like this idea, I say, because I'm annoying like that, really? You want refugees to have their jewellery confiscated? I didn't believe that those people existed. I really didn't. And of course, you probably wouldn't be ready to admit that you like that bit, but if you're trying to unravel Shabana Mahmood's short process, thought processes, she's thinking about you, the person who is none of the things that the residents of Idiot's Corner or Billy Buncher numbers on Twitter. None of that, or Stephen Yaxley Lennon fans. None of those things. But just feeling that this country at this point in this era is devoting too much energy, attention and money to these people when we can't afford to. So I think that's the best I'm going to do until you do better. Okay? What, in that circumstance, does success look like? When do we get back to, quotes, normal, end quotes? Sharon's on the Wirral. Sharon, what would you like to say?
Oh, James, my first time caller, so I am a bit nervous.
It's only me. It's only me.
And I absolutely adore you. I think you're amazing.
Thank you.
I joined the Labour Party 6 months ago. I wanted to join the Labour Party for years and years and finally did it. But then I stopped my Labour membership about 3-4 weeks ago.
Blimey.
Because I felt that it just wasn't going anywhere, really. I went to the conference for the first time in my life. I really wanted to do that. And I think that immigration is something that has to be seen as hundreds of years, not the last couple of years since Brexit.
Yeah.
Or it has to be put into the context of the Britain's history in all these countries from where people are coming from. And I think most people, we don't learn, like when I was saying to your producer, when I went to school, I'm a black person. My parents came here in the 60s. They weren't the Windrush, but they were just after the Windrush. I grew up in school as very one black face and very few. And we learned about 1066. And, you know, we didn't learn about the empire or history or anything like that.
Well, you can't. I don't think you can sustain a lot of these positions if you do understand the empire and colonialism. The idea of responsibility, duty or shared heritage is largely why a sort of Brexity type historians hate the idea of people being taught about the reality of UK colonialism, British colonialism. You can't look at someone Indian and tell them to clear off if you know about what the British did in India, for example,
exactly.
Or the Caribbean, or various other,
exactly.
You know, probably half the world, probably.
But I can see it from both sides, because yes. I actually voted Leave.
Right.
So I can see it from both sides, because I always swing from one side to the other. I mean, can't see it without the context of, I'm a social worker as well for the last 30 years. So I've worked in lots of, like, you know, areas where it's impoverished areas. But then I go back to my nice house that I've got a mortgage on. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, so, and the Leave vote was part of the Commonwealth prioritisation.
Yeah.
So the idea that we're not doing enough for our fellow Commonwealth members, we're instead opening everything up to people from continental Europe. Of course, we've ended up with the best of both worlds. We're still being hideous to people from the Commonwealth, and we've abolished freedom of movement for people from everywhere else. So, good Lord. That was the sort of left Leave voter, wasn't it? Or the Commonwealth-based Leave voter, which again had a patina of logic to it, but events have made it clear that that didn't happen either.
Well, I've got ADHD now. I recently diagnosed in February, and I'm 55, and my daughters call me extra. So I always kind of look from different angles, and like I can see. I've lost my train of thought.
That's
now,
all right. That's the ADHD. That happens to me all the time. So how does it end? Because what you're describing, I mean, you're obviously right to draw upon, you know, 200-400 years of history and migration and movement and empire and colonization, but we're in a window. We're living in a window. We're living in a small historical window where the demonization of migrants and immigration, whether they're asylum seekers or not, is huge for reasons that are quite easy to understand. Tragically, it conflates into people like you. We know that it does. That's why Shabana Mahmood talks about making the country safer for people who look like her. She believes that if you cauterize the concern about asylum seekers by no longer having any concern for asylum seekers, then you stop the leeching of anti-migrant feeling into racism, into anti-non-white person feeling. I don't know that that's true, but that's what she seems to be betting the house on. What needs to happen for this to no longer be pretty much the only topic in town?
I think there needs to be honesty. There just needs to be honesty.
That's not gonna happen.
And you need, and you need to listen to what, you know, you really need to listen to your average person. Like, it, just try and simplify it. You know, it's not rocket science. If we haven't got enough resources, you know, like I said, I swing from different sides.
I can tell that in the space of, in the space of this phone call. But, I mean, you know, I forget what the exact figure is. I think public spending 24-25 is going to be about 1,278.6 billion pounds. That's according to the OBR, if I've read their figures correctly. So whatever it is that we're spending on asylum seekers, £118 is the average daily cost of a hotel stay. It's not going to touch the sides. But I think that that's the position that we're examining today. The person who just, the person that Shabana Mahmood is trying to appeal to. She's not going to appeal to a Farage fangirl or a Stephen Yaxley Lennon disciple. So who is she trying to appeal to? Answer, the person whose concerns are, they believe, rational. They don't believe they're built on fear and anger. They believe their concerns are built rationally, and they, I would typify them as people who think that we just can't do this now. We can't look after all these people now. The problem there is that it's not costing anything like as much as they think it is. There are nowhere near as many as they think there are. And we're not really doing a very good job of looking after them either. So those three more lies. It's a life of luxury, it's a soft touch, and there's millions of them. How do you legislate for things that aren't true if you're trying to address those? You see, we're back to where we started. It's coming up to 11:45. Mohammed is in Braintree. Mohammed, what would you like to say?
Hi. I'm a huge fan, first-time caller, so I know it's only you, but I'm still nervous. I would like to say that all of this is the Farage is doing, and he, once you fix this issue, he's going to create some other issue. So he started, he hated Europeans, he got the Brexit done.
Romanians,
got us in this mess.
Polish people, Romanians, Germans, French people, Spaniards.
Yeah, so he basically got that done, and now he's looking after, he's saying, okay, where do I go next? Where do I spread more hate?
I go to Dover with my Fisher-Price binoculars, and I turn the small boats into the biggest story in the country. And I know that the newspapers will come with me because hate sells.
Yeah, exactly. That's what he's doing. And what's happening is, I don't think it's all about immigrants, so because it's more focused on Muslims, because Ukrainians are also immigrants, and no one's talking about them. So,
well, they are talking about them today. She's saying that they'll have to go back to Ukraine when the conflict with Russia is over. Who's that going to appeal to? Who's you're right, actually, to remind us of the way that spotlight moves, that focus moves from Romanians to, who is it today? Asylum seekers, Syrians, Afghans. Yeah. It doesn't really matter, does it? As long as they're foreign enough. It could be the Irish again in 5 years' time. But that notion of, being an insatiable appetite for fear and anger. Is it ever going to be safe? How do you close it down? How do you quash it?
I think the only, what Labour is doing currently is they are firefighting. So, for example, what I do with my kids. So if he is sitting on the dinner table and he doesn't want to eat his dinner, he wants a chocolate and he's making it so much noise, I say, okay, shut up, have your chocolate. That's what she's doing. I know it's bad. I know it's not going to work.
Fine.
But Labour is doing it. But I think the way
they've given up on good parenting.
They
and they're now just saying, all right, you can live on spangles.
Yeah, and the way they can do it is, I think, counter it with another propaganda. So counter propaganda with another propaganda. They have McSweeney there. He can, you know, what he did with Jeremy Corbyn. So they have people capable of that. So I think what he's currently doing.
I don't know. Some targets, some bombs are a lot easier to defuse than others. For example, I'll just defuse Ashley's. Thank you, Mohammed. You keep repeating the jewellery thing when nobody is actually asking for that. Oh, but Denmark did it, so it's a great one for you to add to your absolute bias on this issue. Just this from The Guardian today, Ashley. Asylum seekers could have jewellery or other valuables taken to pay for the cost of processing their cases, a Home Office minister has said. I don't know what it is about the phrase a Home Office minister has said that leads you to conclude that nobody has said it. But here we are. 11:47 is the time.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
We're going to have these sweeping changes. Asylum seekers will be restricted to a single appeal rather than different appeals. There'll be a new body for fast-tracking cases for dangerous criminals. There'll be legislation to restrict last-minute modern slavery claims.
Steve's in Guildford.
It won't work. It's just rhetoric. Their own party won't allow this, and this is a problem with our government. It's not governing. They're reacting to polls. The Labour Party is just tearing itself to pieces.
Ahmed in Hailsham.
It is too easy, and trust me, the message that is spreading across the world is, you know, you go to Britain, you step on British soil, the government will take care of you.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Great to see you back at Specsavers. Okay, could you read out the letters on the wall for me?
Yep. D-E-A-L-S? Yeah, D-E-A-L-S. Deals.
Oh, right. Our Black Friday deals are eye-catching, but the letter chart's over here.
Oh, sorry.
At Specsavers, we've got all sorts of unmissable Black Friday deals, like up to £50 off one pair of designer glasses. Offer ends on 7th of December 2025. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
Switching to Vodafone full fibre broadband is now as easy as pie. Ooh, freshly baked. It's a walk in the park. Hello, little fella. It's like taking candy from a baby. Come on, as if I'd do that. With One Touch Switch, it's easy. We sort everything out for you. We even contact your current provider. Plus, we'll help towards leaving fees. Switch today to full fibre broadband with Vodafone.
Up to £200 credit to cover leaving fees. More information and terms at vodafone.co.uk/broadband.
Huh. Have you ever wondered what a sandwich sounds like? Not much to it, is there? Unless, of course, it's a Walker's sandwich. Mmm. That is good. Now that's what a sarnie should sound like. Go all crisp in with Walkers. Delicious.
You are not an egg. You should not be put in a box. But when it comes to retirement advice, that's how some people get treated. Put in a one-size-fits-all box. Not at Fisher Investments UK. We work with you to create a personalised retirement plan. Fisher Investments UK. Retirement advice that's as individual as you are. Learn more at fisherinvestments.co.uk. Investing involves the risk of loss. Fisher Investments UK is regulated by the UK Financial Conduct Authority.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear "all change, please," you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Do you ever feel like getting back under your duvet in the middle of the day? Ferroglobin is a great-tasting liquid formula with iron, which contributes to the reduction of tiredness and fatigue and normal formation of haemoglobin. Ferroglobin from Vitabiotics at Boots, pharmacies and vitabiotics.com.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10 to 12 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. So the answer I'd give traditionally, we need to feel a bit happier and a bit better off. I do believe that's true, by the way. You wouldn't be able to shut down the actual racists, because quite often they are very comfortable. They're editing newspapers. That's a very well-paid job. But you get that average person, that fascinating average person. Journalists obsess about Mondeo Man or Worcester Woman, or in my case recently, Tamara in Telford, the Telford Tamaras. If we generally felt better off, then we would be a much less fertile breeding ground for attacking immigrants. And this leads you to Labour, who have not made the country feel better off. You can argue about whether or not they could have done, or whether or not their legacy, what they inherited, rendered that impossible. But they haven't yet made anything really feel better. Again, you can point out things that they have done, if you like, but it isn't working. Whether that's a communications failure, a policy failure, a performance failure, or a leadership failure, I do not know. But that is the only way historically that you turn back tides of anti-immigrant sentiment. And it doesn't always work. As I say, you know, you will still have wealthy people or comfortably off people who just hate foreigners. And they can set up television stations, they can run newspapers, they can bankroll political parties, and they can scream blue murder if you point out that all they seem to believe in is a hatred of foreigners. And they've got the biggest loud hailers and the biggest microphones and the biggest gobs on sticks in their service. So it's tricky. You can never get rid of them, but the message they would pump out in times of plenty loses so much of its power and impact. But when we are in times of need or perceived need, the language works, the invitation works. So the less, and it doesn't anymore apply to people tapping away on a Tesco laptop in their mum's back bedroom in a tatty old dressing gown, which is where we were 10, 15 years ago, that kind of nativist snarling was generally inadequate people or people who had failed through their own fault who wanted to blame it on anybody else. That's not true anymore. You come off the back of Brexit, you come off the back of austerity, you've come off the back of Liz Truss, come off the back of COVID, furlough, all of those things, feeling considerably less comfortable than you did before. That is not your fault. That's events, dear boy, events. Admittedly, if you voted for any of that, then you are more to blame for where you found yourself than people who didn't, but that's moot. You're feeling less comfortable than you expected to or you used to, and therefore the person popping up and saying it's all the fault of asylum seekers or it's all the fault of immigrants gets a better hearing than he would have done before. And that doesn't look like changing anytime soon, which might explain why Labour have decided to join in. But that's how it ends, the question I asked you an hour ago. That's how it ends. It ends with people feeling better off and happier. And I don't know how that's going to happen, because what you'll do, looking at the polls, let the people who are fully supportive of Brexit, fully supportive of Boris Johnson, fully supportive of austerity, go further to the right. Let them have a go. Everything gets worse, not better. But the answer stays the same. Things only get better when people feel better. Better off. That's it. That's the end of my TED talk. Rebecca's in Glasgow. Rebecca, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, I'm the granddaughter of Polish immigrants and also the daughter of an Indian immigrant.
Okay.
And growing up, we were always taught, you have to prove yourself. You have to prove your worth. And I think now, we all who have are immigrants or children of immigrants should prove our worth. And by that I mean we should withdraw our worth for a period of a week, 2 weeks. And it's the only way that people who have a negative opinion of us will see our worth and see that it's not us that are causing the problems. We've got Donald Trump right now who is now facing his problems. He's now got his own supporters turning against him, but we can't wait that long. The problems, we're always going to have problems in a country. That's why we have governments. They're there to fix the problems. They shouldn't be there to pander
but
to the loudest
voices. Who's
going to
give you a platform that
well,
is comparable in size to the massed ranks of the Daily Mail, the Daily Express, the Rupert Murdoch Media, the Daily Telegraph, GBBs, you know, the people who do what I do for a living. Who's going to give you a platform to push back?
Because even these rich people still have to have their bins collected.
Oh, you mean a withdrawal of labour?
Yes, absolutely. We prove our worth. We take away our worth. For a period of a week, 2 weeks, ongoing.
You know what
and
happens
it's going
then.
To impact every single person.
Yeah, but we don't mean
life.
You. I don't mean you. They say
exactly, but it doesn't matter. We all stand together, and we prove our worth. And at that point, every single person's life is going to be impacted. And these people, the ones who might be on the fence, are going to think. Now, hang on a minute.
You're right and you're wrong. I think it would work. I think it might be the only thing that would work, but we know it's never going to happen.
Exactly, and this is the problem. So what is going to happen is we're going to have government after government that is going
doubling down, tripling down, quadrupling down.
Yes,
and just keep worrying about the next 4 years and are they going to get back into power, rather than fixing and addressing the issues that are going to make everybody's lives better for everybody, and then everything will settle down naturally. So unless we collectively get together and prove our worth, then we're going to have these problems.
Bound tools. I think you're probably right. I'm moving on only because I want to squeeze in Foran. That's all. But I think that you're. I hadn't even thought of that before. But simultaneously, we know it. I don't see how it could ever happen. Thank you, Rebecca. Foran is in Brentford. Last word on this, Foran. What's it going to be?
Hi, James. First-time caller.
Welcome.
Hi, Soran, by the way, not Foran, Soran.
Soran, sorry. It was actually not my eyesight, that was my colleague. But, an easy mistake to make by either of us. So go on, what have you got?
Not a problem. Actually, I just want to tell you that I am a refugee. I came to this country in 2007. I'm Kurdish from Iraq.
Okay.
In 2020, I managed to be a British person. But actually, I don't know who I am now. Am I still a refugee? Am I a British person or not? This is due to what I see from the media, due to there's have no one to defend us, and there's no politicians to come out and say this is not right what you're doing to us. I really feel like I lost. I am uprooted now. I'm uprooted here. I have no platform that is defend me.
When did you start feeling like that? Because I imagine when you got your citizenship through, it was a cause for great celebration just 5 years ago.
It was. But since 2015, you could see that the rhetoric against immigration and asylum seekers is growing more and more. Unfortunately, the politicians, whether it's Labour or Conservative or anyone, the way they bring in policies about, it's not about the policy that the country needs. They're looking into the polls, whether Nigel Farage is going to have more votes or whatever, then they're making a policy. I think the politicians should not look into the polls. They should think about the future of the country.
The national interest.
That's what it should be. And trying to sort the migrants or refugees or boats or whatever you call, it's you're not going to sort them this way out. Let's find out what's the cause of these people, why they are living.
And then go back to source. I mean, again, as with the last caller's suggestion, that might be a possibility or a prospect, but in the short term, in the window we're currently inhabiting, it's not an option, and it's not unique to the UK either. So Shabana Mahmood's response to you would be, people are frightened of people like you, Soran.
Well, I can't say, I can't tell Shabana Mahmood I'm scared from her, because she has a relationship with someone that basically causing this problem. For example, I'm talking about Iraq. I'm Kurdish from Iraq.
Sure.
Just look into the politician in the country. Look into the government. Who is in power in Iraq?
And why is there a vacuum?
Member of the government, the ministers, most of them, they have European passport or British passport.
Really?
These are, yes, look into them.
No, I will. I mean, I'll take your word for it until I have done. But that idea that you are, people like you are the source of our problems. People listening to this who think people like you are the reason why they've not got what they want, or they couldn't get a GP's appointment yesterday. We've probably got the same GP, actually, Soren, if you're in Brentford. But the idea that, you know, people... I don't know how you convince them that they're wrong. Apart from, was it Isabel, the lady in Glasgow's suggestion that everybody downs tools. I tried to squeeze you in. I didn't have much time. I'm already late for the news. You'd be welcome to ring in again, because... you know, although that we live in a country where you can't talk about immigration, we will be talking about this issue again sooner rather than later, I imagine. And we will be taking Shabana Mahmood's statement live from the House of Commons at about 3:30 today on LBC. But the time now is 12:01. Stay tuned to find out what is up after the headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From
Global's newsroom, the Home Secretary is facing a growing backlash from some Labour MPs over her plans to reform the asylum system. Shabana Mahmood will set out a series of changes in the Commons this afternoon. The backbencher Stella Creasy has described plans for refugees to be granted only temporary status as performative cruelty. But the Borders Security Minister Alex Norris has told LBC those with concerns should work with ministers, not against them.
I know they see the Britain I do that is a generous, open and tolerant one. I say to them that if we're going to maintain the public's confidence in having that sort of asylum system, we cannot have 30,000 people in hotels, 40,000 people crossing by dangerous boat journeys. That's why we're doing this package. And in doing so, we can open safe and legal routes and have, you know, the system we want.
A court in Bangladesh has sentenced the former Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina to death. She was convicted of crimes against humanity for ordering a crackdown on last year's mass uprising. Hasina, who's been in exile in India, was tried in her absence. The German government is to lift restrictions on exports of military equipment to Israel. Officials in Berlin say conditions have stabilised after the ceasefire with Hamas took effect. Princess Beatrice has joined calls for more research and support into prematurity. She says experiencing premature birth can be incredibly lonely. Beatrice's second daughter was born several weeks early in January. And several weather warnings for snow and ice have been issued by the Met Office. They cover much of Scotland and parts of northern England tonight and into tomorrow. The forecaster John Hammond says temperatures are expected to stay in single figures for the coming days.
We're not going to see some deep freeze which is going to last for week after week after week. Does look as if this spell will probably linger right the way through this week and probably into next weekend before the warmer Atlantic winds come in across those warmer seas.
In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 9 at 96.89. The pound buys $1.31 and a euro 13. LBC weather, a dry and chilly afternoon for most. Some light rain for northern Scotland, a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Five minutes after 12 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Apologies to Jim and David and Vanessa and Andrew and others. We will no doubt be returning to that, possibly tomorrow after we've heard the finer detail of what it is that Shabana Mahmood will say later today. That speech to the House of Commons, that statement to the House of Commons being taken live on LBC. I'm not sure Tom Parker Bowles, the Queen's son, has ever prompted a conversation on this programme before. I've got two possibilities this hour. One of which, I think, if the likelihood of anybody ringing me in the last couple of hours to tell me they really like the idea of confiscating jewellery from refugees was slim, I've taken a judgement that nobody would ring me to defend the other story that I was thinking of discussing with you this hour. When's the last time you did a genuine double take? Have you ever caught yourself doing a genuine double take? You know, when you sort of actually feel your head moving twice, because you've kind of gone like that, you've gone, what's that, what the? You look over there and you see, what the heck? I did a genuine double take this morning. Not at this headline, oddly. I cut two stories out of the newspaper and I've got the slightly more measured headline in front of me. UK skincare brands face masks for four-year-olds. Dystopian. Say experts. This is a company that is selling makeup, for want of a better word, to including a skincare mask to children aged 4 years old. But I didn't think anybody would ring me to say, yeah, James, wind your neck in, that's absolutely fine. So that has fallen at the first hurdle of potential topic. I mean, sometimes, if everybody is in agreement, it can be fascinating and illuminating, but I don't think that a succession of people expressing spluttering disbelief at face masks cosmetics being available for four-year-olds would be a particularly engaging hour for us to spend together. Which leads us to the King's son, Tom Parker Bowles. And I've kind of had this once myself, but happily the dog was actually muzzled, so we were okay. But if the dog hadn't been muzzled, then my little Cavapoo, I think is the technical term for the little dog that I have, who is the sweetest, sweetest little thing. Do you know, she's 9 years old and she still looks like a puppy, especially if she needs a groom and her hair, her fur has got very cuddly. She looks like a teddy bear, my little puppy, my little dog. And I think there's a photograph of me somewhere with her, I think for one of the newspapers when my second book was out. And on one occasion, a rather large dog kind of came for her, but the dog was muzzled and I picked her up and it was okay. If the dog hadn't been muzzled, I've got two problems. I don't know what I would have done and I don't want to think about what might have happened to the dog. So Tom Parker Bowles has described a 15-stone animal attacking his 2-stone pet in Kensington in central London. And described himself as fighting off the beast, rolling about on the pavement and desperately trying to unlock its jaws from her tiny torso. His dog, Maud, was very, very seriously injured, needing what he's described as very serious surgery. He wrote about it, I think, on Saturday. And hopefully she's going to be okay. And I just found myself thinking about it. I just found myself thinking about the what would have happened if the dog that came for my little dog hadn't been muzzled. But I also, and this is why I think it might be interesting for us to do, I also found myself thinking, what would I have done? Do you do this? You will do if you read a lot of Lee Child books. I'm reading the very latest Jack Reacher at the moment, and he does brilliantly. Lee Child, and it's actually his brother Andrew who writes the books now, albeit that they've got both names on the cover. One of the reasons why those books are so brilliant, and they are just brilliant, I tell you what, on the new book, you won't believe the people that are quoted on the back. Normally it's just other thriller writers, but Lee Child is so good at what he does. I think Malcolm Gladwell, possibly Margaret Atwood. There's all sorts of, like, full-on intellectuals who are quoted on the back of Lee Child novels because he's a bit like Ian Fleming or someone like that. He manages to transcend genres. And I've read all 30, some of them more than once. But one of the reasons why his depictions of violence are so utterly hypnotic is because they're quite technical. So he might describe the speed with which a karate chop is coming down onto a trachea or a windpipe and the exact biological impact that the trachea has. So what you do sometimes when you're reading Lee Child novels, and I'm sure you do this with other things as well, like Karate Kid or something, but you find it because you know, unless you are trained, unless you are a martial artist or former special forces or something like that, you know you've got none of these skills, right? So it says something like, as the blow came in, he crossed his right arm over his left arm to create a V, which he moved upwards so that the arm got caught in the V and deflected to the left, and then he headbutted him in the nose. And what you do is imagine what you would do in certain situations, thinking somewhat naively that you might be able to deploy some of the techers that you've learnt from Jack Reacher. Very naively, I'm not for a minute suggesting that you should read a Lee Child novel and then go and pick a fight with the local thugs. But you do because of the way that it's written. It makes it sound doable. Do you see what I mean? Because of the way that he writes it is so detailed. It's like he breaks it down frame by frame, which makes it sound quite easy sometimes. Jack Reacher is 6'5" and 150 pounds. Let me be absolutely clear that those are key prerequisites to doing any of the things that he does in the context of violence, even if you have his skills and his tactics. But I've done it with the dog. I may need to rephrase that. I've thought about what would I do if that dog came for my dog. So we are walking around the park, and you see a big dog. In Tom Parker Bowles' case, this is the worst nightmare scenario because the dog was on a lead. an unmuzzled dog on a lead that went for his dog to such a degree that he pulled over its own owner. So the owner of the big dog is flat on their face on the pavement, and the big dog has got the little dog in its jaws, trying to kill it. At which point, and there's no reason to doubt his account, Tom Parker Bowles, the king's son, the queen's son, I beg your pardon, just jumps in, and you hope that you would, right? This is a phone-in which is coming very quickly towards a question that which will be, have you ever had a fight with a dog? We've done 2 hours of very serious political conversation, but we are, I think, knocking at the door of a radio phone-in which will ask whether you've ever had a fight with a dog. Because I want to know what you actually do in that moment when a big dog, a big, big dog attacks a little dog and the little dog is yours. I've had images in my own head of, well, I'll tell you exactly what I do. There's one thing that I think I would be capable of doing, but that presumes that the dog hasn't been spayed. I'd kick it in the testicles, right? I don't even know whether that would work, but in my mind when I'm thinking about what would happen in the context or in the event of this actually happening, one of the first things I think is I would kick it in the testicles. I'd get my foot around, I'd kick it, ideally in the testicles. A lot of dogs don't have testicles, in which case I'd just kick it as hard as I could. But I don't know whether that would make any difference at all. And if the jaws are kind of locked on the little dog. And then the other thing I sometimes picture is £250, not £150, sorry. The other thing I kind of picture is trying to prise the jaws open to free my dog. But what happens when you've finished? Do you see what I mean? What happens then? Your little dog runs away and you're holding a big dog's mouth open. Presumably it's wriggling and wrestling. You can tell that I'm not exaggerating when I tell you that I've given a very strange... If you've got a little dog and you love it like I do, then this won't sound strange to you at all. If you haven't got a little dog and you love it like I do, then this will sound like the maddest thing you've ever heard. But these are genuine mental adventures that I've been on. So there's the kicking, right? There is the prising open of the jaw, which Tom Parker Bowles effectively describes himself as doing. This is why it resonated with me so much. I eventually managed to fight off the beast, rolling about on the pavement and desperately trying to unlock its jaws from her tiny torso. And that has happened in my imagination. But what happens next? So you've got the dog. You've opened the jaws. You've prized the jaws open. So you're covered in dog phlegm and sharp teeth and all of that, and get it, and your dog has rushed off, and hopefully a friendly passerby will look after your little dog. But you've now got a kind of steel trap of a dog's gob kept open only by your muscles. What happens when you move your fingers or you move your hands out of the plate? So I've got kicking, I've got jaws, I haven't got... A lot of people, and I don't know if anyone has suggested this yet, but on occasions in the past when we flirted with this sort of territory, people have suggested inserting a finger up the dog's bottom. I think in the heat of the moment, I'm not sure that would present itself to me immediately as an option. I mean, hygiene and squeamishness, queasiness aside, I don't know. And then, I mean, a lot of experts tell me you've got to choke the dog. But again, how do you do... Do you see what I mean? So let me be absolutely clear. The phone lines are open, 0345 6060973. I want you to tell me about something that's actually happened. In the first instance, and I may change my mind in the course of the hour, I may open the conversation up more widely. In the first instance, I don't want advice from people who've never done it, all right? Unless you are a fully qualified police or army dog trainer. Okay? Or, as Keith has just pointed out, I will take a call from Jack Reacher on this. So if you are Jack Reacher, I don't think Jack Reacher's ever fought a dog, actually, in the 30 Jack Reacher novels by Lee Child and latterly Lee Child and his brother Andrew Child. But I don't want advice from people who've never done it. Okay? No offense. I don't want to sound ungrateful. But I want to know what the reality of your experience was, and I'm casting a slightly light-hearted air over this conversation, but only because it would be so traumatic otherwise. It may well be there are people listening to this whose stories are anything but happy endings. To be fair to Tom Parker Bowles, his little pup is in, I mean, dog hospital, fighting for its life when he's writing this article. It's not funny. So the stuff about putting fingers up bottoms or kicking genitals, all of that, you kind of lends itself to a slightly knockabout air. But this is anything but funny, this subject matter. And I am genuinely keen to know what actually happens. And the best way to work that out is to ask you what did happen when it happened to you. He also says this thing, which we may get stuck into, but again, don't at me yet. Because I, first of all, I want to really confine the conversation to people who've had fights, humans who've had fights with very big dogs. 03456060973. The second bit of the story would be Tom Parker Bowles saying, I'm a great believer in there being no bad dogs, rather bad owners. I'm never quite sure about that, because some of the stories that you hear involve dogs that have been lovely forever and then suddenly aren't. So I'm never quite sure about that. But I'm not sure that it's a conversation that we want to get stuck into today. So there it is. What can the rest of us learn, for good or for ill, from what happened to you? Rob wants to know, if not Jack Reacher, would you take a call from Jack Russell? It was actually a Jack Russell, I think, that Tom Parker Bowles was. It is, yeah, his dog is a Jack Russell. Mine is smaller and less sinewy, less cartilaginous, to use the word of the week from last week, than a Jack Russell. I have what is essentially a ridiculous dog. My dog genuinely looks like a cartoon character or a teddy bear. She's gorgeous. But I often find myself, as I walk her through the park, wondering what I would do if that massive machine of an animal over there decided to have her for lunch. What would I actually do? Please God, I never have to find out, and I'm sorry that you did, but I want to know what happened. Phone lines are open. It's 12:18.
This is LBC.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep. Where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters. On your doorstep. Based on 2024 UK and EU Amazon packaging data.
Right, I think my home needs to feel less still a student with only one teaspoon, and more grown-up curated interior masterpiece.
Right. Wayfair it is.
Exactly. I'm thinking of that one statement piece that changes the whole room, or maybe just those perfect finishing touches that pull it all together.
With furniture and decor for every style and budget, Wayfair turns your home dreams into reality. Just one tap to get it out of your head and into your home. Download the Wayfair UK app and shop now.
In 2024, a hangry fan posted, why do other countries have better McDonald's menus than ours? So, we went abroad and heisted some worldwide favourites. The World Menu Heist. 9 of the most wanted McDonald's menu items from around the world. Now in the UK. Until 25th of November from 11 a.m. Fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org. Assuming you want to get noticed.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 20 minutes after 12, and it is clearly no laughing matter. And Tom Parker Bowles managed to write very powerfully about the experience he had on Friday in central London when a massive dog, he thought it might be a Cane Corso, which are absolutely huge, an Italian Mastiff breed traditionally used as a guard dog, went for his little Jack Russell in the street. And he had to, I mean, a man bites dog is the definition of news, by the way. You're familiar with this figure of speech. Dog bites man, not news, man bites dog, news. And I just wonder, as the owner of a little dog, what you do or what you did when this happened to you. Let's start in Chiswick. Cameron is there. Cameron, what happened?
Hi, James. Yes, yeah, so I'm in Chiswick at the moment, but actually we're area neighbours. So my parents and I are both based in Brentford.
Okay.
So first of all, first incident actually happened in Gunnersbury Park. I feel like I've seen you there before.
Quite possibly, with my beautiful little animal.
Yeah. So I've got a staffy, so they're actually quite tenacious and tough anyway.
Sure.
So in the first case, in Gunnersbury Park, there was a XL bully off lead, and just went for mine. He was about, must have been about one and a half at the time, had him by the neck. So I was aware of the advice that you need to choke the dog out.
The first advice is to try to distract the dog with a loud whistle.
Hadn't tried that.
No, but you wouldn't in the moment. You're panicking, aren't you? Get as far apart as possible. This is after the dog has been released. Try to immobilise it against a solid object. But none of this really addresses the question of what you do if your dog is... I mean, what they actually say is don't try to separate them yourself because you could end up with some nasty injury. But who's going to stand and watch?
I have in both occasions.
I'm sure.
Suffered nasty injuries.
I'm sure you have.
I was sort of wrestling with the dog, trying to separate it.
On the floor?
On the floor, yeah. And I told the owner to grab the dog's balls. She actually sort of cupped them, which, if anything, probably encouraged the dog rather than... so then I remembered, try and choke it out. So I got sort of on top of this dog and tried to choke it out in, like, a rear naked chokehold. And it got me by the arm.
Because you've put your arm under its chin, and it's quite hard to keep it there, and the dog has...
Yeah.
Lordy.
Yeah. So I can't quite remember why it released, but in the end, what I did was I twisted its collar. So that's...
I'm so glad you said collar then. Syllables, eh?
So that works, actually.
Because you cut off the airflow with the collar rather than with your arm. But when you first went for the chokehold, your dog was still in the jaws of the dog you were choking.
Yeah. I mean, I thought he was going to die. I mean, his eyes were rolling back. It was terrifying.
It was terrible.
And thankfully, he had the dog had him by the back of the neck, which is quite fleshy, so it didn't get any of the sort of any of the arteries, I think. Second time was Sheen Common on Boxing Day last year. Funnily enough, this time it was a boxer on Boxing Day.
Yeah.
And he, as a result of the attack in Gunnersbury Park, he had started to become quite reactive, so always on the lead now. I just sent him off to a sort of boot camp training.
Yeah.
He was to come back model dog. I was on Sheen Common, and this boxer just came out of nowhere, just went to him. Again, I tried to reach into the fray, and the boxer got me by my index finger, pouring with blood. I mean, I had to go to the hospital like four times because you can't stitch a dog bite because of infection. This time I used the lead.
So you learned from your last experience. What were the owners like in those two? Just out of interest.
So in the first instance, it was a partner of the owner, and she was useless, just screaming. Then I got her number for like insurance reasons, and I called her, and her partner answered the phone and said, basically, we're not going to help you out with any vet bills. If you want to call the police, go for it. He was just
quite belligerent.
Incredibly belligerent. And I mean, I do agree. I think it's the owner, not the dog. But I would say that he was a bit of a stereotype when it comes to XL bullies.
Okay.
And then the Sheen Common owners were, again, a bit of a Sheen stereotype, but also very uncooperative, very defensive. Tried to blame it on my dog, whilst my hand is literally pouring with blood, standing in a puddle of blood.
It is an extraordinary thing, isn't it? I bet the instances where someone has gone, gosh, that's never happened before, but you've got us banged to rights. I bet that never happened.
It's
because we wouldn't. What would you do if it was the other way around? Is that you wouldn't immediately reach to blame your own dog? You would reach we all do to blame someone else. But did you say a rear naked chokehold?
Yeah.
What's that then? What's naked got to do with it? Unless you're really veering into unexpected territory.
Like, it's like jiu-jitsu.
Is it?
Like when you sort of put your, you put the throat in between your, like on the inside of your elbow, and then you push the head forward.
So we don't know why it's got the word naked in it then.
No idea.
No, fair enough. I thought, I see you've got a very sort of, you sound very authoritative. Now, next time you see me in Gunnersbury Park, do say hello, but no rear naked choke hold, Cameron, okay?
That's I can assure you.
27 minutes after 12. I just worry. And again, then you start getting, because Cameron sounds like he could probably look after himself. For example, he knows the lingo. If I knew the phrase rear naked chokehold, it would be because I'd read it in a Jack Reacher book, not because I'd ever done any jiu-jitsu training. So then you've got the, well, what if you're a little old lady? But then again, you're unlikely to ring me up to tell me about the time you had a fight with a big dog. Paul's in Lancaster. Paul, what happened?
Hi, it was a couple of years ago. I was in the park in Liverpool. And I was walking my West Highland White Terriers.
Yeah.
And I let them off, and they were running around, having a great time, when three Dobermans came running over.
Oh, Lord.
And I just looked, and one of the Dobermans, one of my little Westies, was a bit of a protector, so started to bark. And that's when one of the Dobermans went for him.
Yeah.
At which point, I jumped in.
What did you, what do you mean you jumped in? I mean, a Doberman is like a small horse.
Yeah, I was standing next to the little dog, and when it went for mine, it started biting it.
Yeah.
I kicked it.
Yeah.
I
don't think you're supposed to do that, are you?
No, you're not. I don't know why, because I got a laceration to my ankle. But then the owner at which point came running over. He got one of his dogs under control, at which point I picked up my dog. And protect it.
Yeah.
And again, that was a bit stupid because the Doberman. Yeah, the Doberman
tried to jump up.
Well, it jumped up and I raised my leg, and that's when I kicked it in its nose. I didn't want to really hurt the dog.
No.
Because nobody wants to hurt a dog, do they? But, and I felt guilty for it, but I got a laceration to my ankle, to my wrist, and my dog had, was close to a punctured lung.
Good God.
Yeah, so, but the owner was. After it all stopped, after, 10 minutes of me screaming?
Yeah.
He was really apologetic, and he gave me his number. He paid for all the vet's bills.
Oh, good.
Bought me a pint.
And were there all three of them his? All three of the dogs? I wonder, kind of, seems unlikely that nothing similar would ever have happened before, doesn't it?
It was incredible. I think, I mean, when you've got two Westies and three Dobermans all playing around in the field, and then one sort of, I don't know whether the Doberman came over to play and my dog started barking out of protection.
And set it off.
And set it off. But, we all had a great time.
that's kind of scary. And you should never pick up the small dog, apparently.
No.
You've discovered that since, and you know why, but that's not... Try to pull the dog away... that also doesn't work. I'll run through the do's and don'ts, actually, because I think it's important. But you acted instinctively.
Mm, yeah, you do. You don't think. And it's the same when I walked through a field and I got chased by a cow. I picked up my dog and I wish I hadn't.
Why? Why haven't
I? The cow basically went for me and the dog, and I was carrying a dog, which slowed me down.
Yeah.
And they say, just leave the dog, but you can't.
But the dog will be fine. The dog can run away from a cow.
Oh, she's really old. She couldn't run. And I thought, oh, no. So that was a near miss. So,
you're a magnet for this kind of terror. This kind of trouble. Is the dog still with us?
Fortunately, yeah.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear it. I thought it was cats that had nine lives. It's 12:30. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Amelia Cox has your headlines.
The government is facing a growing backlash from backbench MPs over plans to reform the asylum system. Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood will set out a series of changes in Parliament later. The ousted Prime Minister of Bangladesh, Sheikh Hasina, has been sentenced to death over ordering a crackdown on last year's uprising. Hasina has been in exile in India and was tried in her absence. And a yellow cold health alert is in force in northern and central England until Friday. Snow is possible on higher ground in Scotland and parts of England tomorrow. LBC weather staying mainly dry and chilly with sunshine for most. A few light showers in northern Scotland and eastern coastal areas, turning cloudier in the northwest later, a high of 9 degrees.
This is LBC.
Managing your business is a big task. To then stay on top of the numbers as well, you're only human. That's why the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform supports your business growth as the number one recommended cloud accounting software. Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals. Verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard your flight to Geneva. This is your captain speaking, and I would like to take a second to welcome our very special guests. All the skis and snowboards that enjoy a free flight to Winter Wonderland.
The best skiing experiences start with the right airline. Book your winter holiday now on Swiss.com and enjoy free gear transport.
Our pet's in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Hillary's best ever Black Friday sale is now on, and it doesn't get any better than this, with an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, control your blinds from anywhere with a half-price smart hub when you buy any electric blind, with measuring and fitting always included. And word to the window wise. Order now for blinds and curtains fitted in time for Christmas. Book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Fanning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling.
FanningDental.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 12:33. Do you know, sometimes if I'm in the right mood, the strangest things happen on the programme. I'm now tempted to have a conversation about how frightening cows can be. After the last caller essentially shared the time he nearly got attacked by a cow. I don't know what he thinks he's playing at. This is a phone-in about humans fighting with dogs. Prompted by a very, very hair-raising experience that Tom Parker Bowles, the son of the Queen, had last week when his little Jack Russell, and it's not so much the dog attacking the dog, it's the human trying to rescue the little dog. Let me give you the sort of the closest to official guidance that we've been able to find, because some of the things that I suggested you would do naturally, you are not supposed to do. But problem with that is, you know, the story I shared with you involved Tom Parker Bowles prizing the jaws of this massive dog off his little dog, and you're not even supposed to do that either. So what are you supposed to do? Just watch? So things you should do or try to do: try to distract the dog. A loud whistle or throwing a coat or water over them may be enough to get them apart. But then it says, however, be aware that these distraction techniques may increase arousal levels for some dogs. It is not a guaranteed approach. So what's the point of that advice? Try and throw a coat over it or some water or a loud whistle. Oh, but be careful, because that might make it worse. All right, thanks. Next. I'm beginning to sympathise with Michael Gove's attitude to experts at this stage. Get as far apart as possible once the dog has been released. Well, that's no use to me. The dog has not yet been released. But use a physical barrier, such as a bag or umbrella, to block the dog. Try to immobilise the dog against a solid object, such as a wall, if the dog is on a lead. What does that mean? You tie the lead to the... No. What... I don't even understand. Where did you find this advice? Is it the RSPCA? And the last one, walk away slowly, avoiding eye contact, but not turning your back and not making any sudden movements if the dog stops attacking. But none of this. Okay, let's go down to what to do if your dog is attacked by another dog. Try not to panic. Oh, this is Dad's Army territory now, isn't it? This is ridiculous. Of course you're going to panic. Anyway, try not to panic. If you panic, you make your dog and the biting dog worse. Try to stay calm and focused. And then it says, this is the bit I can't quite... Don't try to separate them yourself. It might be hard, but if you try to pull your dog out of harm's way, you could end up with some nasty injuries too. You could also injure your dog further if the other dog hasn't let go. Instead, you should try to distract the other dog from a distance. Hopefully the other dog's owner will also be doing this. but see if you can distract it with a loud noise like a clap. Don't shout at or make eye contact with the dog, as this can make them feel more threatened and make things worse. So at the moment, you're standing in the distance clapping. Honestly, Jack Reacher would be livid. Call your dog away. Yeah, the dog is caught in the jaws of a Doberman. I'm not going to be able to just call it over and then report the incident. Yeah, so I think the short answer is nobody really. There's not a great deal you can do. Which doesn't, of course, green light you or leave me encouraging you to do any of the things you shouldn't do. But on the list of do nots, you shouldn't shout or hit the dog, you shouldn't try to pull the dog away, and you shouldn't try to move the dog with your hands. So I'm not being glib, but all I've taken from this is that you should stand over there clapping, which the dog might misinterpret as approval. Ellie's in Wandsworth. Ellie, what made you pick up the phone?
Hiya.
Hello.
So I just wanted to say, so everything you've just said, been the advice,
yeah.
Been all of that.
Well, you can't say that. I mean, you can, well, because you just did. But, I mean, it's not super helpful, is it?
No, because, I mean, one, you're just wasting time trying to distract them. They've literally got tunnel vision at that point. Yep. And if they're going to attack, they're going to attack. The best thing you can do is choke the dog out.
Definitely. It's not even on this list. I'm just going to double check. Do we know where this came from, this advice? The People's Dispensary for Sick Animals. PDSA. So it's pretty official. There's no mention of choking.
Yeah,
have you done this, Ellie? Because I was fairly clear about the qualifications for contributing to this hour of the program.
Yes,
have you done a naked chokehold? If that's what a rear naked chokehold on a twice.
Yes.
Gosh.
Tell
me more.
None involving my old dog, own dogs, I have to say. But yeah, twice, unfortunately.
So you were walking someone else's dogs.
Well, one of them, I was on a walk with my own dog, and just intervened an attack. I couldn't stand by and watch. No. I mean, the owners were literally just screaming and had no idea what to do. Oh, and the other time, I was literally just having coffee outside on a high street, and then it just happened right in front of me. So, but again, they had no idea what to do. So,
you should have a costume. You're like a superhero. Tell me what you actually did. I mean, you get your elbow around the dog's neck.
No. So, essentially, you don't want to go anywhere near the dog's mouth.
Right.
Because if they do...
No, of course you don't.
...release, they are just going to turn around and redirect. Even if you are the owner and they're not, you know, aggressive to people, they are going to go for you. So, the first time it happened, it was quite a... I mean, it was an Akita, so they're a big dog anyway, but quite a big Akita.
Yeah.
Went for a little Pomeranian.
Oh, dear.
And the Akita's first instinct was just to pull back on the lead. And all you're doing, if you pull back, you're just creating resistance in the exact perfect place. They're just going to pull forward. So, I mean, there's no use. The Pomeranian owner just tried to open the dog's mouth, which, again, don't go near their mouth.
No, you wouldn't.
So
would you?
I just unclipped they were on, both had collars on,
yeah.
With like the clip leads. So I just unclipped the lead.
You for just the big loop one? It,
no, the small one.
Okay.
So I unclipped it.
Yeah.
And then you literally just put the lead round the Akita's neck and loop the lead back through the handle. So you essentially create a slip lead.
Yes.
And just literally
pulled
it, but don't pull backwards, pull upwards, quite
Why?
Sharply upwards, because if you pull back, they're just going to pull forward. If you pull up, they've got nowhere to...
They can't really pull down.
Yeah, so if you pull
God,
upwards...
You're clever. Did you know all this did you know all this before?
Yeah.
Well, because you've trained. You've had some training yourself.
Yeah.
You've been very coy. I don't know why you're being so coy.
It's one of the... Yeah, I think it's quite a basic thing to...
Well, you say that. You're the only one here who knows about it. I'm still standing over there clapping, Ellie. That's no use to anybody, is it?
But it is quite frightening to see. And I think both owners were completely panicked, but I literally just pulled up on the lead, short and sharp, and it just slumped to the floor. And then obviously released the Pomeranian who then went. But
and what did the owner do of the aggressor rather than the victim?
Oh, was just completely flustered. The dog had never done it before, didn't know what to do. But I actually did stay in contact with the Akita's owner because he was just so flustered, didn't know what to do. And so I you know, had said, I mean, to be fair, the Akita was on a lead because it didn't have great recall.
Yeah.
The other one wasn't on a lead at that point, in which generally if you see a dog on a lead, it's going to be on a lead for a reason. You should give them space, really. Whether it's muzzled or not, you should give them space.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the Akita, it turned out, had been completely friendly for about 8-9 years. And generally, if they turn like that, there is going to be a cause for it. They've taken it to the vet and he had a massive brain tumour.
No.
Yeah, so it was a neurological
thing.
Yeah, so, but that would be why he'd, you know, changed his behaviour.
Of course it
like
would,
that.
Wouldn't it? Yeah, of course it would. Well, that, I mean, that was crikey, good for you. You're a kind, as I say, you're a sort of friendly vigilante. And also keeping an interest, having an interest in why the other dog, that's a sign of a real dog lover, Ellie, if you'd allow me to. I mean it, is that you knew that there was probably more to this than met the eye, and you had concern for the owner of the aggressor dog because
both,
of your kind of empathy for man and animal, man and beast. Do you know, as a reward for your efforts, would you like to know why it's called a naked chokehold, a rear naked chokehold in jiu-jitsu
Absolutely.
Terms? It's because it's something you can do that does not require the use of a kikogi or training uniform.
Right.
So just naked just means you're not wearing a training uniform. It doesn't mean that obviously you're not wearing anything, because that would be very weird. thank you for your call, and also on behalf of all dog owners for doing what you did on both of those occasions. It is 12:43. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I'll let the coyness go. I wonder whether her training was subject to the Official Secrets Act or some such. And here's a missing word round. Well, actually, it's not a missing word round, because we're kind of talking about it anyway. But more people. Someone texted me this and I checked because I thought it can't be true. But then when you actually think about it, of course it's true. Cows kill significantly more people every year than blank. Than what? Cows kill significantly more people every year, which reminds me, I've got an unhinged headline. Have you got the noise? Have you got the thing? Just bear with me a minute. I need to find it. Yep. Okay. Daily Telegraph unhinged headline.
Unhinged headline.
Did the BBC kill Diana? That's it. That's the headline.
Unhinged headline.
So thank you to the Daily Telegraph for returning in blistering form to territory that used to be exclusively theirs. I suppose I should add, a new book says she did. But that is the headline. I'll read the article later and get back to you tomorrow about whether it is quite as unhinged as it sounds at first glance. But the missing word round, which doesn't have a jingle, and probably never will. Cows kill more humans than... And the answer, I'll tell you after this.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Come legally or don't come at all. Just how tough are the government's new asylum rules? And President Trump says, go on then, release the Epstein files.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips for the football?
Your best bet is to head over to BetVictor. They're giving new customers a terrific welcome offer. If you bet a minimum of £10, they'll give you £30 in free bets.
Phil, that's a steal of a deal.
It's a good darn deal that'll make you squeal for real. Neil?
My name's not Neil.
I know, but it rhymes.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on the football at BetVictor. 18 plus, opt in and bet on any football marketing at odds of evens or greater. No cash out, 7-day expiry. Terms and conditions apply. Gambleaware.org.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on 2024 UK and EU Amazon packaging data.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard your flight to Geneva. This is your captain speaking. And I would like to take a second to welcome our very special guests. All the skis and snowboards that enjoy a free flight to Winter Wonderland.
The best winter holidays start with the right airline. Book your family trip to Winter Wonderland now on Swiss.com and enjoy free gear transport.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helps advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
Sharks. There you go. You can use rewind to find out what that is an answer to. I mean, a couple of people who've tuned in relatively late in the day have been slightly surprised by the first sentences that they've heard on the programme in the last half an hour, but on we go. So sharks is the answer to a question that I asked you just before that break, but I'm not going to tell you what the question was. It's a missing word round. I'm going to let you use Rewind Live Radio to find out. Back to dog attacks. And I mean, it's odd, isn't it, that you can have a conversation about something that's up there among my worst nightmares, and yet this felt like a relatively knockabout hour. It's anything but. And yet here we are. What actually are you supposed to do? No one's entirely clear, although I'm going to trust Ellie's advice more than the official stuff that we got off the internet. If you pull up, get a lead around the dog's collar, if you can, or a slip lead, if you can, and pull upwards rather than pull away, because it's very easy for a big dog to counteract you trying to pull it backwards by just lunging and lurching forwards. But if you pull upwards, there's not a great deal they can do about it. Sebastian's in Brighton. Sebastian, what made you pick up the phone?
Hello, James. I was out for a stroll with my brother on a local Brighton golf course.
Mm.
And we heard these what one can only describe as blood-curdling screams coming from like an area of bushes. Which point, yeah, the adrenaline kicked in, and he's got an aging golden retriever. And I said, look, it was awful sounding.
Could have been anything at this point.
It could have been anything at that point, absolutely. So I sort of sprinted into the bushes, you know, not really quite knowing what I'd confront.
Very brave, very brave.
And I was confronted by an older lady on her knees, trying to pull a puppy out of the mouth of a pit bull.
Oh, no.
So I ran up and I said, is it your dog? Is it your dog? Because there's no one else around. She said, no, she was screaming, no, it's not my dog. It's not my dog. It's killing my dog.
Right.
So it sort of split second stuff, obviously. So what I did was I jumped on top of the pit bull and I squeezed its ribs with my knees.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I leant forward and I twisted its collar. In an attempt for the dog to let go, because it was shaking the dog from left to right. I mean, it was white. There was blood everywhere. I mean, it was like some sort of film. It was a ludicrous scenario. And I'm squeezing it and nothing's happening. The dog isn't letting go. It's shaking it. This woman's screaming, saying it's killing it. It's killing it. Stop it. Then another lady comes across the top running sort of, and I shouted, is it your dog? Instead, it's my son's dog.
It's the second time someone's been in charge of a dog that wasn't theirs, isn't it?
And caught lead as well.
Interesting.
So then I lifted the dog with my left hand by its collar, the pit bull, hoping it would the gravity would make it drop it, because I'm now holding the pit bull with my left hand by its collar and the other dog. And it didn't drop the dog. And then the woman who was the mother of the owner of the dog, she said, punch it.
It's flipping out. It's easy for her to say.
Well, I know.
I hate people like that. Start standing on the sidelines telling you to risk your life. Go on, punch it. So what did you do?
I punched it.
You punched the dog.
I gave it...
At this point, my mum would say, if she told you to jump off a cliff, would you have jumped off a cliff?
Well, bearing in mind, I'm still holding it with my left hand off the ground.
So it's an uppercut?
It was an uppercut to its belly, at which point it did spit the dog, the puppy out.
Yeah.
And I just shouted at the owner of the puppy, just grab the puppy and run.
Run, yes.
But then I'm left holding this kind of savage pit bull.
Now very angry and a bit winded.
By its collar. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So then I said to the woman, get it on its lead, get it on its lead, and I'm going to count to three, and I'm going to jump back, and you're going to pull the dog.
And it did.
And that somehow, in some kind of sort of choreography, somehow managed to happen. And that was that.
Well done. No, well done. It wasn't even your dog.
It wasn't my dog.
You just run. Some of us run away from trouble, some of us run towards it, Sebastian.
It was just one of those things. And then the woman took my number, the woman who was the owner, and she said, oh, I didn't. She called the police, and then as she was calling the police, the owner of the dog approached her. I'd left at this point, and apparently he was not, let's say, not particularly nice guy, and said, I really wouldn't call the police if I was you, I know where you live, kind of thing.
Whoa.
So it all got a bit like that. She told me this later on the phone, and she said she got it to the vet.
Yeah.
I called the vet for her, the emergency vet, because she was in such a state of shock. And the vet had said the dog was seconds from, I mean, literally, it
really?
Had so many
Death
lacerations
door.
On its neck.
Oh, God.
But the dog survived.
Well, that's the happy ending, but it's the second. So we've had a couple of recurring themes, haven't we? Both occasions when the owner wasn't present. Because it makes you wonder about sort of what the situation at home would be. On both occasions, the owner wasn't present and immediately present, and someone else was in charge of the dog. And both of those owners turned out to be particularly unpleasant people. In one case, in both cases, almost threatening, actually. Nobody's gone for the... Chris is very cross because he's tried it four times. The other method that we mentioned at the very top of this hour, the kind of... That one. Chris has done it four times. But no, I can only take genuine stories. If you don't ring me, Chris, then it's not going to get included. That's the way it works. I don't know if I'm going to have time for another call on this, so apologies in advance to Gaz and Steve and Mick and Kathy and others, because I want to talk to Scott Lucas, the Professor of American Politics at University College Dublin. We got a double problem, Scott. So when seeking to chronicle the madness, the chaos, the catastrophe of Donald Trump, there are two major obstacles. The first is the sheer volume of stuff that's going on. And the second is the Teflon nature of Trump now. The fact that however awful things are, they seem to stick. And never perhaps has that been truer than in the current crisis of the so-called Epstein files. There is so much that it's hard to get a handle on anything in particular. And even if there are smoking guns galore contained within the tranche, if and when it's finally released, we know that smoking guns don't work on Donald Trump in the way that they do on other politicians. But I know you've been digging into it. What's your biggest takeaway so far?
Well, James, I mean, the immediate takeaway, because people will ask about it today, is why did Donald Trump flip and suddenly call on Republicans to support the release of the case files? These were the files over the prosecutions of Jeffrey Epstein, given that Trump has held out against it since the start of his 2025.
So these are quite different from the email tranches that we've been looking at over the course of the weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, the email tranches are from the Epstein estate,
yeah.
And they handed those over to the House Oversight Committee. The what we usually hear of is the Epstein files are the actual files of the Justice Department when they were prosecuting him, and those are the ones that the Trump people have been stonewalling. Now, the reason why Trump has flipped is actually going to be the easiest part of this interview, James, because you cut through the white noise. Trump knows that he's going to lose the vote in the House, the lower chamber of Congress on Tuesday, and he's probably going to lose it by a significant margin. Indeed, one of the leaders, the Republican leaders, trying to get the Epstein files released, Representative Thomas Massie of Kentucky, is looking for a two-thirds vote, a two-thirds vote, because that would be a veto-proof majority, and that would be very embarrassing to Trump. So Trump, knowing that the House will probably pass this, it'll go to the Senate where it could be considered. It's like, okay, now I'm going to look like the guy who favors
so
the release of these
cases.
He's
incredibly transparent, if nothing else, isn't he? Reliably transparent. I'm going to lose, so I'm going to pretend it's what I wanted. And damn anybody who says otherwise. Thank you for that. We're short of time, so I'm going to nudge you towards what we have discovered over the course of the weekend. And for me, at least, Steve Bannon's name is particularly interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, had it not been for the fact that the emails put Trump into Jeffrey Epstein's apartment and his house alongside victims, Steve Bannon would have been in a whole lot of trouble right now, because the emails from 2018, and as a quick reminder, this is years, many years after Epstein was convicted in Florida in the first case, is that Bannon and Epstein are chatting with each other about how to promote their various ventures. And specifically, Epstein's giving Bannon advice on his political maneuvering and on his media ventures. And they even get to one point where Epstein, Bannon thanks Epstein for the advice. And Epstein has these three words, and let this stick with you because the media missed it. Epstein says, yes, glad to help. Massages not included.
Good Lord.
Now, if you know what massages is code for, that is not only possibly putting Bannon in hot water over his interaction with Epstein, the way that Andrew got into hot water with his interaction with Epstein, it is that Bannon may know what massages refers to.
It would be an odd message to send if he didn't, wouldn't it? And something else that not enough people, as you might have expected, have picked up on is this thing about Epstein being involved in these far-right movements was new to me. I didn't know about that. But once you accept that, then the three UK politicians who Bannon named and essentially boasted to Epstein that he'd been breaking bread with, those names, once you've established that he's in this world, were less surprising.
Not surprising at all, because to give the wider context to this, and I'll let the UK politicians defend themselves on this one. Steve Bannon, before he joined the administration and as soon as he got into it in 2017, was cultivating far-right movements. It went back all the way back to then. He was courting far-right movements in Italy, including the movement of Matteo Salvini. He was courting the National Rally, the far-right movement in France, and Marine Le Pen, and he was especially courting the far-right AfD movement in Germany. Now, Jeffrey Epstein not only knew about it, Jeffrey Epstein, again, was talking with Bannon about it, and then, of course, Bannon would have been talking to UK politicians who he wanted to cultivate. And by the way, James, he was cultivating those UK politicians at the time that the Trump White House moved to replace Theresa May with Boris Johnson, which also happened in 2018.
And he says so. He says, I've been visiting with Nigel Farage, Boris Johnson and Jacob Rees-Mogg on this trip, to which Farage, in characteristically disingenuous stroke dishonest fashion, has responded by saying that he has never had a meeting with Steve Bannon, Jacob Rees-Mogg and Boris Johnson, but no one said he had. Bannon was saying he'd had meetings with Boris Johnson, Nigel Farage, and Jacob Rees-Mogg, full stop. So it's a very typically Farage wriggle, that very typical ferrety behaviour. And I can't let you go without asking about Bubba, but remember, this is a family programme.
There is a story. One of the cryptic notes in the emails is from Epstein's brother, which is about Putin knowing that Trump blowing Bubba. There has been speculation that Bubba refers to Bill Clinton because that was his nickname from when he was a young man. Epstein's brother has come out and said, no, it's not Bill Clinton. It was a joke between two brothers. And I'm happy to treat this one as a very lurid distraction from the key stories we should be talking about.
Yeah, I guess so, until Bubba emerges and says it was me, in which case all bets are off. Thank you, Scott. We didn't have much time, but you filled it perfectly. Professor of American Politics at University College Dublin. So remember, the stuff that is being drip-fed into the public space is not the stuff that Donald Trump has been desperate to keep secret until it became clear that he was going to lose a vote in Congress, at which point, lo and behold, he suddenly started claiming that he wanted it to be released. It's funny, that, isn't it? Such a stand-up man, ordinarily, blowing in the wind like... Anyway, that's enough for me. It's 1 o'clock. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Global Play. It's free. Download it now from your app store. Tom Sorbick will be with you at 4. Now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. I'm going to start with the government's new asylum rules. There'll be an announcement from the Commons at around 3:30 from the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, but we know a fair bit about it already. The message is, go back home if your country becomes safe. arrive illegally and it might take you 20 years to even apply for settled status. There will be less of a response if you claim family life defence in a deportation hearing. No automatic benefits, and we may seize assets, including jewellery, to pay for your keep. There will be age tests using AI. But there will be some new legal routes, we're told. The first left-wing government in almost two decades, the toughest asylum rules announced today. Is this what you voted for?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, backbench MPs are being told to wait for the Home Secretary's announcement as the government faces a growing backlash over migration reform. Shabana Mahmood is due to announce changes in the Commons this afternoon. They would see an overhaul of human rights laws as part of efforts to deter people from seeking asylum in the UK. Shadow Minister for Policing and Crime, Matt Vickers, thinks they don't go far enough.
The reality is these are very small steps in dealing with what is a huge problem. And the reality is that this government's approach to immigration is characterised by gimmicks. We had the one-in, one-out scheme. Then we saw the smashing. We haven't seen any gangs smashed, have we?
The chairman of the BBC says it is determined to fight the planned lawsuit from Donald Trump, insisting there's no basis for a defamation case. The US president's threatening to sue to up for $5 billion over the Panorama edit of his speech ahead of the Capitol riots in January 2021. The corporation has apologised for what it's called an error of judgment. The former Prime Minister of Bangladesh, Sheikh Hasina, has been sentenced to death for crimes against humanity. A trial lasting several months has taken place in her absence after hundreds were killed in a student-led uprising last year. Hasina is thought to be living in exile in India and has refused to recognise the authority of the court. Sky's Neville Lazarus, who's in New Delhi, says she faced multiple charges.
Murder, torture, disappearance, using lethal weapons, also directing the heads of security forces to use choppers and drones to bomb these students protesting against the government in July last year.
Donald Trump has U-turned on whether documents relating to Jeffrey Epstein should be released. The president is now urging Republicans to vote to publish them in full, saying they have nothing to hide. And a cold weather health alert has been upgraded to amber in parts of northern England. It came into effect at midday and will stay in place until 8 a.m. on Saturday, covering the northeast, northwest, Yorkshire and the Humber. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 25 points at 96.72. The pound buys $1.31 and €1.13. LBC weather staying mainly dry and chilly with sunshine for most. A few light showers in northern Scotland and eastern coastal areas. Turning cloudier in the northwest later on, a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Off to my mum's first.
Yeah.
Then your nan's.
Yeah.
Then my cousin's.
Yes.
Then Uncle Paul's.
Yeah.
Then your second cousin twice removed from your dad's second marriage.
I mean, they did send us that card. Wait, who's my second cousin?
Škoda's got you covered this Christmas. With great offers and delivery before the big day on stock vehicles, you can do it all in a new Škoda. Find yours at škoda.co.uk. T's and C's apply. Ask your retailer for offers.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there. Good afternoon to you. Going to focus heavily this afternoon on the programme, not exclusively, but heavily on this new asylum plan that the government has come up with. And we know a fair bit about it already. I'll go through some of what we do know. But there will be a formal announcement to MPs in the House of Commons at around 3:30, which from the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, which we will bring to you live here on LBC. Before we hear what the government has been saying already on it this morning and talk to a former Director General of Immigration Enforcement at the Home Office, let me just trot through with you some of the things we do know will make up the bulk of this new policy, this new plan. Let's start with status, refugee status. People who have refugee status, so they've been accepted here as being refugees and needing the assistance that flows from that. They could well be forced to return to their home country if it subsequently becomes safe. The Home Secretary indicates the support for measures that would end the permanent status of refugees is part of the plan. And people would need to reapply to remain in Britain every 2.5 years. Now, there are already some Labour MPs, let alone others, pushing back against some of these proposals, saying that the plans for that 2.5 year sort of repeat review are completely wrong in principle, and that they create a great deal of instability in the lives of the people involved. It begs questions, for example, around the 250,000 Ukrainian people who are living here and working here and settling here in some cases because of the war. When that war is over, whenever that happens, does it mean that they would have to return or be expected to return? People granted asylum status will have to wait a lot longer before they can seek to become UK citizens. Refugees are currently given protection for 5 years, after which they can apply for indefinite leave to remain, which then can lead to citizenship. But under these new changes, people who arrive illegally would have to wait 20 years. Now, even there, there's a sort of anomaly, isn't there? Refugees and illegally. Because what's going to be part of the announcement at 3:30 will be an announcement on new legal routes, something that campaigners for refugees and campaigners trying to stop these dangerous crossings across the Channel, which is, I think, most of us would support an end to that. One of the arguments they make so often is that there aren't legal routes that people can choose, hence they choose this route. The right to family claims that are often used in court hearings to challenge deportation. It's understood that Shabana Mahmood's plan essentially pushes back against that, and also pushes back against elements of the European Convention on Human Rights. Again, we'll have to see what detail is there, but we're yet to see the full details on the family reunion policy. Ukrainians welcome to the UK, as I mentioned, would also have to return potentially, you know, arguably under these plans. I'm sure she'll be challenged on that. The benefits question, because I think a lot of the concern that you have expressed to me in conversations that we have had has been around the cost of hotels, the cost of benefits, the idea that people come here and just automatically get help when so many of us in this country are struggling. Well, to that, Shabana Mahmood's answer is that she will remove automatic benefits and checks on high value items. So if a person has something of high value, whether that's a car or some family money or whatever, that would be expected to be used to essentially pay their way while their asylum claim was processed. There'll be the use of AI, artificial intelligence, to establish correctly somebody's age. New legal routes, I mentioned a moment ago. There are concerns about the Modern Slavery Act and a push to changes in the European Convention on Human Rights around that. Again, we'll hear more at 3:30. And last but not least, and for now anyway, visa ban.